Flyover Politic Podcast, the show for normal Americans. From his undisclosed bunker, here's your host, Tony Reed.
And welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast. Today's show, as we talked about on our Facebook page and in my blog, segment one's going to be the LA riots 25 years later. Segment two is going to be heroes and villains of the riots. And I originally had a cultural segment with a bunch of race baiters talking about how everything was okie dokie with the riots because the white man's the devil and America sucks. But I'm going to push it to the next podcast, which is actually podcast number 186. Almost hitting 200. It's kind of crazy. And then we'll close with No News, which is news and social media nuggets. So before we start out, wanted to do a shout out to a city. Haven't done it in a while. This week's city of the week is Scottstown. Sorry for anybody out there. Scottstown, Ohio. 43 listens. Scottstown is a township in Ohio. Is unincorporated community in eastern Windsor Township, Lawrence County, Ohio, United States. Zip code 45678. And in 2014, it said 20,326 people live there. I have only hit a corner of Ohio, but I've never been there. But I thank you all for listening. So whoever's in Scottstown, Ohio, you rock. Top listeners were Coloring Zebras, which is my son, which surprised me that he listens, and Scott Arnold again. So to both of you, thanks. Thanks for listening. Right off the top, we're going to talk, this is going to be a very long podcast. I already recorded yesterday. Today is the 27th of April, year of our Lord, 2017. And I recorded the meat and potatoes about the riots yesterday on the 26th. So no fancy sound effects, nothing today. I'm going to be trying to squeeze in the front and the back. And it's going to be over 3 hours. And for that, I hope you enjoy it. I know the long ones, some people say they enjoy, and some people tell me that they suck. So, sorry, folks. This one hit close to home. I want everybody to, once again, start going to FOPPODCAST.com, FOPPodcast.com, our web space. Still getting about 100 looks a week and 30 to 50 new viewers, which is pretty cool. But there you're going to also see my blog. So I've been blogging a lot about the impending podcast and post-podcast. And I did a very long blog on the riots from a personal perspective without getting too in-depth. But be worth the look. So first little bits of news. The guy who owns Google, he owns his own airship. And I'm talking a blimp. No shit. He actually has a Silicon Valley hangar. You know you have a lot of money when you do that. I posted a video of Nancy Pelosi on the Facebook page. And that's, of course, the Facebook / Flyover Politic. And it is amazing because she's stumbling for words, inarticulate as hell. I just thought it was very interesting. I'm not making fun of Pelosi. Well, okay, I am. But I posted it more for the reference that to this day, you can search NBC's video archive. And they have compilations about George W. Bush unable to formulate a sentence with a thesaurus and two dictionaries. But there's nothing on her. And I think the hypocrisy of it's just crazy. ESPN went through a purge. It happened last night. They were supposed to be up to 40 to 50. Then it was almost a close to 100. I started going through lists. It's very sad. You know, I have no big alliance with ESPN. I bash it all the time because of their politics lately. But some of the guys, I was really surprised. Ed Werner, I used to see him every weekend. Austin Ward for the Big Ten. Jason Stark. He was on Mike and Mike every week. I mean, that guy just was a really cool dude. Danny Cannell. You know, I used to listen to Resilio and Cannell when I was driving. I kind of like their show. It's kind of like listening to the Lebatard. It's much for the personalities as it is for the sports. I actually tweeted him from my personal Twitter account saying, you know, door will open. I had 20 years in the Army, didn't give a shit when I left. I did 11 years of the company, got bought out of the clothes, everything I ever did. Worked a job that I hated for a year, and boom, a door opened. So, you know, he'll end up somewhere. He'll be on Fox or something. Brett McMurphy, Charles Arbuckle, Jerry Punch, which surprised the shite out of me. Jade McCarthy and Jamie Sire, two sportscasters on, or their anchors on the Sports Center. Jay Crawford, which really surprised me. Trent Dilfer. And a couple other people of record, but I won't beat the horse. So interesting that, you know, right behind it is the, you know, our next podcast. I'll read an article from the public editor telling everybody wants to suck a dick because he's just going to keep on politics. But you just had to lay off 100 people. Something's definitely changing at ESPN. And some of it could be your politics. To our tweets of the day, Vox reporter Dylan Matthews, we cover him a lot on this. Universal coverage is obviously important, but making alcohol, tobacco, and driving vastly more expensive is arguably more so. If we could tax your undeserved arrogance, we'd balance the national debt, somebody said. And he went on. This was really long. I want really high taxes on tobacco, alcohol, sugar. I want to ban human drivers, and I want gun control. It's not an either or. Neon taser, people, we need to close the gap between rich and poor. Same people, we need to make driving so expensive only rich people can do it. I mean, this, I'm only reading like three tweets. This guy went on a whole purge. We all need to go to caves. But his cave needs to have a, you know, electrical outlet so he can tweet off his Apple phone. HuffPo got a new logo. A lot of mocking of it. We think our new logo does just that. We fell in love with the new typeface, National, for all you font nerds, because it's strong and a little quirky. The bold italic carries the I forward in the same way our brand has grown and evolved over 12 years. The shapes are, shut up. This thing just goes on. It looks like they literally took it from a different website. People were putting pictures of Plumber Crack up there, which I thought was really funny. Because it does look like a crack. I don't get it. But they're really trying to, as we said in the last podcast, they're trying to distance themselves from Arianna Huffington. But they, even in their logo, the slash goes left. They're just a liberal rag. I mean, they are Breitbart for the left. But somehow the mainstream media thinks they're great. Woman fights to wear Trump hat for license photo. Her name's Cheryl Halls. And, man, she did a whole freaking crazy thing over wanting to be at the DMV in Tallahassee. Of course, it's always, you know, Dana Loesch does a great segment. For those who have listened to the Dana Loesch show, Florida man. They come up with kind of like my news and social media nuggets section. Crazy stories about somebody in Florida wrestling a gator naked or, you know, just all this crazy shit. So, of course, when I saw Florida, I just started laughing. Bill Nye. Right up front, I got two sound bites, Bill Nye. One, a song he had on the show for transgenderism. Cause now that's scientific, I guess. Once again, I don't understand how all these people on the left can forget that, you know, freaking biology. They just toss that shit out. And then he did one where it's actually sexualizes ice cream. I will explode on the other side.
So, you guys, seriously, this next thing I feel is very special. This is a cool little segment. You know this woman from Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Please give it up for Rachel Bloom.
This one
goes
out to all my bipeds who identify as
ladies.
This world of ours is full of choice, but must I choose between only John or Joyce? All my options only. Hard or moist, my vagina has its own voice. Not vocal cords, a metaphorical voice. Sometimes I do a voice for my vagina. Please don't tell me I'm the only one who does that.
Cause my sex junk is so much more than either
power bottom or a top off. Versatile love may have some butt stuff.
It's evolution, ain't nothing new. There's nothing taboo about a sex stew. Just add salt or Gerard Depardieu.
French treasure.
Cause my
Cause my sex junk is so oh, much more than either or. If they're alive, I'll date them, Channing or Janet Tatum. I'm down for anything, don't box in my box. Give someone new a handy, then give yourself props.
Oh, you think you're so smart. Did you learn gay in college?
Here with all of that while I drop some knowledge. Sexuality's a spectrum, everyone is on it. Even you might like it if you sit up on it. Drag queen, drag king, just do what feels right. You're tall, pansexual, flirty wood sprite. Who enjoys a fleshlight in the cold moonlight?
With a sad clown, Skyping via satellite.
Dance, skimpy, home slice, sing it with me all night. That's how you want, it's your goddamn right. Cause my sex junk is so much more than either Get off your soapbox, get off your soapbox. My sex junk's better than bagels with lox, with lots of schmear.
Exactly the right message, Rachel.
Nice job.
Whoa.
Rachel Bloom, everybody. Prashant, nice job. Whoa. Nice. Beautiful. Nice. Carry on. Where was I? Oh, yes. Give it up for DJ Seahorse.
Of course, enlightened and forward-thinking, but not everyone sees it this way. But there are lots of flavors to sexuality.
Right, why are we here, Vanilla?
Damn!
Oh, this again? Come on!
Chillax, Strobs!
Settle, everybody. Settle. Now, I've spoken to some of you about my theories on the nature of being ice cream.
Which have no basis in science.
It's the science of feeling. And as Vanilla, I feel that I am the most natural of the ice creams, and therefore the rest of you should just go ahead and also be Vanilla.
Oh.
It's the one true flavor.
No! Don't make me stop being strawberry delicious!
Oh, Christ. Look, no one can make you stop being strawberry, Strawberry.
You're Strawberry! Hold me, salted caramel!
I just think if you want to get right with the big ice cream in the sky, change your flavor by wishing to be Vanilla.
What if the big ice cream in the sky is chocolate?
Blasphemy! Everyone should pretend to be Vanilla until they no longer have the urge not to be Vanilla.
I did not urge to be pistachio. I am pistachio. Hey, mint chocolate chip!
Sorry I'm late. I was busy being two awesome things at once.
Cool.
Not cool. Pick a lane, Buttstain.
Vanilla's trying to convert us all again.
That's nuts. No offense, nuts. Come on, Vanilla. Nobody wants just one flavor of ice cream.
I do.
Haven't you ever wanted to be in a Neapolitan?
I can't.
Come on. It's natural. All natural cocoa.
And strawberry fresh from the field.
It's so creamy and delicious.
Big ice cream in the sky, help me. It's good. It's like...
Giddy up.
Meet you at the bowl.
This is on.
Oh, yes.
It's like... Whee! Yeah, get it. Woo!
Get in here, nuts.
Premise,
what the fuck? It just goes back to everything I say. The left ruins everything. It used to be a science show and you learned science. Now you're getting social agenda rammed down your neck and ice cream cones are all turning gay. I mean, what the fuck? But to our tweet of the day, there was a thread about welcome to Twitter. And I actually got this from Twitchy because it's like I never would have found this. And one person says welcome, but listen to the responses on the welcome to Twitter. Not everyone on the internet is crazy, but all the crazies are on the internet. And it was a hashtag advice for people joining Twitter. Everyone loves 327 tweet rants. make someone your bitch right off the bat to intimidate the others. Chuck Nellis said, wear a helmet. That was one of my favorite. I used to always say, life sucks, wear a helmet. If someone asks you if you've seen the My Sex Junk video, say yes. That's, of course, Bill Nye. It's not for the easy offended, was another one, which is pretty much true. A lot of pictures with Kermit flipping you off. Yeah. Another sound advice. She's probably not a blonde. She's probably not 21. And she's not a college student. That's pretty true. No, you didn't actually win a Samsung Galaxy was another one. George Takaki, Trump supporters, well-intentioned as you are, please repeat after me. It's not rigged. He's just losing. And then somebody says, be careful when you put out political predictions, which I thought was good. Get ready for the outpouring of love and affection. Abandon hope, all ye who enter here, which I thought was great. And the last one, which sums it up, is just a simple one. Advice for people joining Twitter, don't. Hate tweet of the day! To our hate tweets, dissent is not enough. Anna Wintour on Trump, Theresa May, and whether she'll feature Melania in Vogue. We decide that we wanted this issue to focus on everything that's happened in the U.S. as we reach the end of the first 100 days of what might be the most controversial president living memory, says BAF founder, CEO, and editor-in-chief Erman Ahmed, who interviewed Wintour at her office in One World Trade Center. So after we decided that, the question came, who should we speak to? So we went to a bunch of losers, and this is one of it. And it is just like that movie with Meryl Streep, where she's a bitch, because Meryl Streep is a bitch. Yeah, that's that lady dressed up being a bitch. Judge, mayors, actors, 100 days of Trump resistance. This is a New York Post article. Unbelievable. I only referenced it. I'm not going to read the whole thing because we have a long podcast today. But, I mean, it brought up something that is totally unbelievable. Judge actually blocked the Sanctuary City stuff. And I'll go more into it in the next podcast. But it is amazing how activist judges are right now. They have totally gone over the deep end. And I just stare at it and go, all this would be racist if it was Obama. Because it's not constitutional. One of them actually said, well, he doesn't know the Constitution or something about the Constitution and blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, why in the Constitution to say you as a judge can stop the president from enforcing a fucking law? Here's the reality, lefties. If you want illegal immigration, pass a bill. You're breaking the law. The president isn't. Sanctuary cities are legal as 10 fucks and 2 on Sunday. Had a soundbite. GMA, surprising. Trump still polls higher than Hillary. With all the shock and awe, I won't play it. Teens commandeer BART train and violent takeover robbery of passengers. This was in the Bay Area. In some cases, beaten when dozens of juveniles stormed aboard the train and forced them to give up their property. The incident happened at 9:30 p.m. Saturday at the Coliseum Station in Oakland aboard a Dublin Pleasanton bound train. Witnesses reported 50 to 60 juveniles jumping the fare gates and going to the platform. To boarding the train, the juveniles committed multiple strong-arm robberies of bags and cell phones. I once again just want to proffer, especially with the subject today, which I'll say a lot during it, if a bunch of white kids jumped a goddamn fare thing and took over a train with a bunch of black people and beat the fuck out of them and took all their shit, would that be on the NBC Nightly News? Why did I ask that question? It was rhetorical. I haven't had a motherfucker of a day, but I have one now. I'm going to read it. Because I just want to curse. I just want to F-bomb so much that you can't listen to this at work. Planned Parenthood's reputation isn't exactly stellar these days. So they're turning up to a special group of Maine women who can help drape the abortion business in fuzzy sweaters and apple pie. Planned Parenthood. This is a tweet. Grandmothers for Reproductive Rights is the advocacy group you need to know about right now. What we need to know, the article states, is how is this even remotely logically possible? Well, GER really started as a kind of joke, said Judy Carl, who started it in 2013 to educate and advocate for women's health and reproductive rights. GER writes to lawmakers and rallies at the State House. Those plans are often made while laughing around a kitchen table. There's something about grandmothers doing this, working with this, and caring, because it's not for us at this point. It's for our granddaughters, our sons, our daughters, our grandsons. In other words, their pro-abortion crusade is for the children? Julia tweets, how'd they get to be grandmothers if they aborted everything? I'd be terrified if my grandmother advocated for me to be murdered, All-American Spice, a woman said. Guess these young ones are fortunate to have been born too young to realize grandma has some loose screws. Jeremiah Alexander, thank God those girls' mothers didn't exercise her reproductive rights. Millennial views, so she wanted her grandkids aborted? Just look at their smiles. They survived murder, the granny supports. And my favorite one is, this is despicable, gross, sick, despicable, and evil. And Carrie Simpkins, there are approximately 844,628,000, it's a mathematical problem, I guess, groups I'd rather learn about. Grandma's Against Living Babies is pretty fucking disgusting. And for that, GER, Planned Parenthood, and all you baby-murdering motherfuckers, you are the motherfucker of the day!
Freaking
sick! You're just all sick people. And I'm pro-choice! But you make me wonder, why am I pro-choice? Why do I always give a liberal dictum after I say I would never have an abortion, but I don't care if you have an abortion, it's between you and your God, but I don't think it should happen after 23 weeks. And oh, by the way, I don't want to pay for it, but somehow even that makes you fucking go crazy and call me a sexist, misogynistic, stay out of my vagina. You know, I don't want to be in your vagina, because most of the women yelling at me about this, you have a vagina that I don't want to be around, because you probably don't shave, clean, douche. You're gross. I think it's a reaction. As I've said on the show, which sounds crazy as fuck, and you're going to say I have a tinfoil hat, a lot of these man-hating women just never got laid, so they fucking hate men now. Lesbians, because I couldn't make it with guys, let me try a woman out. What the fuck? I'll be bisexual. And all you women who just are so against the birth of a child, if an agency says other than fetus or embryo or clump of cells, you go crazy on them for humanizing it. See, I even did. I just said it. A baby. Fuckheads. Hypocrisy of the day is where we're at now. I'm not playing the soundbite. Short for time. NBC article. No shit. Why should you do... What should you do? Let me try that again. NBC article. What should you do in case of nuclear attack? Don't run. Get inside. The threat seems to come almost daily now out of North Korea. Ballistic missile firings, preparation to test a nuclear bomb, and routine bravado. State-owned media and the rogue nation last week vowed a super mighty preemptive strike, one that will reduce the U.S. to ashes. Hey, newsflash, NBC. That shit's been going on since Clinton. I didn't see articles about what to do in case of a nuclear attack. You fucking trolls. Christopher Hayes, also from the Peacock. If you haven't been paying attention to right-wing media recently, it's amazing how much attention current campus controversies have gotten. But modern conservatism, emotional fuel is grievance and persecution, so they need to focus on Berkeley campus. No, it's just that the president speaks about it now. And oh, by the way, more people are starting to pay attention to how little fucking snowflakes like you who all want to dress like Maddow and get special attention are acting a fool. All this week, no sound bites. The net blamed adamant Trump for looming government shutdown. You know, back when Obama shut down the government, it was Republicans' fault. Now that the Democrats are going to shut down the government over the frickin' border wall, which Trump has retracted, and now Ted Cruz, which we're going to cover in the next podcast, is actually saying why we use El Chapo's money to pay for the shit, which is pretty slick. It's pretty freaking slick. That was a good idea, by the way. Now it's Trump's fault. And you know why, boys and girls? Because it hurt them with Clinton. It hurt the Republicans to shut down the government during Clinton. So the left just thinks, and the left by that, the media, because they're all left, that they spend all their time trying to blame Republicans, thinking it's going to help them. But you just did it under Obama. Didn't work. Trump's in the White House. You lost 1,000 seats. Go suck it. Had a great soundbite. Not going to play it. Morning joke. Sad. The Trump supporters still, you know, let's, what the hell, let's play it. I haven't watched Morning Joe forever, and I want to hear them cry over their freaking cornflakes over there on that loony bin of a show that only gets like 387,000 viewers each morning.
I'm sure you'll disagree with me, as does the entire Twitter universe. But when I saw in the first poll that I read yesterday morning, I think it was ABC Washington Post poll, that 96% of people who voted for Trump are glad they voted for Trump, and 2% are not glad they voted for Trump. If you're Donald Trump, you're saying, okay, I've done pretty damn well with my base. And people go, yeah, but that's enough to beat Hillary. No, the first thing you do in American politics is you hold your base and you win the nomination for your party, and then you get a chance to run again. I would think that 2% would have been closer to 10 or 15%.
It's one of the more remarkable numbers.
That's a remarkable number. And I mean, the reason that I was shocked by that, John Heilman. It does have an impact if you have a gerrymandered House and you have districts that are overwhelmingly Republican. If Donald Trump is getting 96% support from people who voted for him in districts that he won by 70%, those House Republicans aren't going to move away from him. The senators will. Joni Ernst will. But that number right there is significant, because he holds on to support in the House.
This is the number that says that Donald Trump's not collapsing. And it's also the number that says that Donald Trump can't do any of the large, big, ambitious things that he'd like to do. They're right. Both true. But he's not in free fall right now. There was a period of time a few weeks ago where we thought, well, he could be down in the mid-30s.
But he was like 34-35%.
He gets then he's in free fall. And then people who would be his normal supporters in Congress start to say, hey, you have no ability to sway me. You have no ability to intimidate me. Forget about you, buddy. But right now, he's not in a state of collapse. But he's equally not able to do anything large at this level.
And as we just showed, when Trump voters were asked by the Washington Post poll about their decision to back him, only 2% regret their support.
How could that just be 2%?
I'm surprised. I mean, just anecdotally, we're asking Trump voters just everywhere. They are wavering.
They are
wavering. Maybe they still support him. Maybe wavering, but they still support him.
Maybe they don't want to say to the pollsters. Yeah. Again, it's a tell of first month, they're like, yeah, we love him. Second month, and now into the third month, I'm hearing a lot of Trump voters that first month said, hell yeah, we're with him, going, God, I wish the guy would shut.
Oh, my God, they sound suicidal. You know, for those who listen to the show a long time, ignore the following statement. For the new people, listen to me. America loves underdogs. When all you have 24-7 is Trump sucks, Trump sucks, Trump sucks, Trump's the devil, Trump sucks, Trump's the devil, Trump sucks, Trump's the devil. That's all you say? People feel sorry for the guy. Why do you think his polls are better than you think? Why are the support not going away? Because the supporters, he is getting shit done. When you weight a poll, 34% Democrats, 23% Republicans, and the rest independents. By now, everybody's so slick they're reading that shit, dude. So you go out and ask a bunch of Democrats, and he still doesn't tank as hard as you want. It's not going to work, especially for you, Morning Joe. Nobody's listening. Politico, I only do this because this is just a fucking unbelievable. We are in almost May 2017. Anybody with an IQ above a freaking kumquat knew that Ben Rhodes and company lied about the Iran deal. This is Politico now. The Obama administration didn't tell a full story behind its concession on the Iran deal and prisoner swap. The Obama White House didn't publicize 14 Iranians whose charges were dropped as part of their Iran deal. Another tweet. Obama's hidden Iran deal giveaway. They didn't just dismiss a bunch of innocent business guys. A new report reveals Obama misled the public about quiet giveaway to Iran. And Vox even covered it. Fox. What part of the whole thing with Ben Rhodes coming out and saying it was just a snow job and being proud of it back in like October, November, or earlier, I can't remember because we covered it on the show, but what part weren't you listening? Oh, you weren't listening at all. That's right, because there was no investigative reporting. It's the dear leader. He who shall make the seas stop rising. Got it. Jim Roberts, between Maggie and New York Times, Ashley R. Parker, Glenn Thrush, and Costa reports, we're seeing a wealth of revealing White House coverage. Respect. Chris Saliza, this is the golden age of political reporting. The golden age. You fucking people are just unbelievable. Oh, my God. You're just now knowing that Obama lied the entire country about a deal that we gave up billions of dollars and let bad people get off. But you're in the golden age. Got it, because there's a Republican. Got it. The Hill. This was also all this week. Democrats grading Trump. Pocahontas said he got an F. An F. Everybody on the internet to Pocahontas, I couldn't imagine a more ringing endorsement. Yes. Yes. Suck it. Suck it and suck it hard. Over on CBS, State Department removes Mar-a-Lago post due to outrage. The left lost it because they put an article on the State Department about Mar-a-Lago, because that's where the president goes other than Camp David or someplace else. And somehow they saw that as an advertisement for his resorts, and they were freaking, so they took it down, and CBS reported it because they were the lead on it, that it was the best thing that ever fucking happened. Okay. Bush's ranch was reported, and on websites, because he did business out of there, but it's Trump, I got it. Let me see. Some of this stuff is fucking stupid. We're just going to pass over. Senator Rubio, press conference. The Chechen government, brutal campaign against LGBT people and other over the last several weeks is horrific. So he's actually doing something positive for the LGBT community. But remember, since we hold every Republican accountable for every Republican, and we ignore every Democrat's faux pas when somebody on the fringe says something like, I want to blow up the goddamn White House, nobody walks up to Nancy Pelosi. What did you think about Madonna saying, we want to blow up the White House? And that just doesn't happen. All these reporters lost it. I don't know how to feel about Rubio defending gay men in Chechnya. He's not our friend. Another guy, he's got some sort of political ulterior motive, just not clear yet what they are. The gay agenda, my friends. The gay agenda is still in full effect. And our last hypocrisy before we go into stat of the day, this is from HuffPo. Why is Obama giving speeches to bankers for $400,000? Ben Jacobs, a non-lib, can think of about 400,000 reasons. So Obama, boy wonder, is now doing exactly what Hillary did. And they're doing almost $500,000 a speech gigs, making money. And you have a problem with it now, HuffPo? That is the way of the left. That's what they all do. Why would that perplex you? in any form or fashion. Stats of the day, NBC and MSNBC still love Obama. During this last week, CNN had 52 minutes and 12 seconds. MSNBC had 58 minutes and 46 seconds covering Obama in a speech in Chicago. All that time. Because the dear one came out and spoke again. It's almost like it was a Russia segment. Wow, Z, wow, wow, wow. So that completes our abbreviated, yet still informative, lead-in section. Going to go out to a bumper with some Public Enemy, because it's pretty apropos for what we're going to talk about, and hit the two segments on the L.A. riots. 25 years later.
Hit me!
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
There's not a minute to spare.
Don't worry.
Going, going, gone. Now I dialed 911 a long time ago. But don't you see how late they're reacting? They only come and they come when they wanna. So get the morgue truck and involve the corner. They don't care cause they stay paid anyway. They treat you like an ace that can't be betrayed. A no use number with no use people. If your life is on the line, then you're dead today. Latecomers with the latecomers treasure. That's a body bag in disguise, y'all, I'll bet ya. I call them body snatchers cause they come to fetch you with an autopsy ambulance just to dissect ya. They are the king cause they swing amputations. Lose your arms, your legs, and limbs, compilation. I can prove it to you, watch the rotation. It all adds up to a fucking situation. So get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo, town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo, town. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? He's a winner to the job, never being done. He would have been in full effect. The late 911 was a joke, cause the owl is joking. A day to talk until your life when it's broken. They need to be in a pawn shop on him. 911 is a joke, we don't want him. I call a cow cause the cow will come quicker. The doctors huddle up and call a flea flicker. Reason why I say that cause they flick you up like fleas. They be laughing at you while you're crawling on your knee. Or to the stream, so don't a limp. Thinking you are first when you really are dim. You better wake up and smell a real flavor. Cause 911 is a fake lifesaver. So get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo, damn. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up and get down. 911 is joking, yo, damn. Get up and get down. Late 911, where's the late crown? Get up and get down. 911 is joking the whole town. Get up and get down. Late 911 where the late crown. Get up and get down. 911 is joking the whole town. Get up and get down. Late 911 where the late.
Welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast with Tony Reid.
Thank you.
Andrea Armatau.
Of course, that is the sound of Rodney King being beaten, which was the predication of all this riot. And I'm not going to overlap between my blog and my experience, or just a brief experience that I covered in that blog from the riots in 92. But I will cover the military aspects because it's one of the rare times in our history that federal forces were actually called up. So, Operation Garden Plot was the name of it, and it was Task Force Los Angeles. Garden Plot is a generic operation plan for military support-related domestic disturbances. State and federal governments responded quickly to the crisis. The governor of California committed the state police and 2,000 National Guard soldiers to assist on 30 April. At 22:30 on 29 April 1992, a part of the response to this disorder, the 3rd Battalion, 160th Infantry Mechanized, 40th Infantry Division, California National Guard, was ordered to mobilize. King's initial response was slow and somewhat disorganized. Its troops did not arrive in the streets until 17 hours after the order on April 30th. Basically, 21 to 2400 the following day, all 3rd Battalion companies deployed to their assigned areas. It was the first tactical battalion to be mobilized, the first to deploy to the streets of L.A., and the last to redeploy. By the early morning of 30 April, the governor of California had ordered state police and about 2,000 guardsmen in the area to restore order. The federal response was very timely. SecDef Richard Cheney put 4,000 Army and Marine troops on alert the same time on the 30th. And if you read my blog, I was on duty that night, brand new uniform, brand new boots. My wife's birthday was the first, and the cake mix and her president were in the trunk, and I had the car. One of the rare times we only had one car, and I had that car. So we were pretty much stranded. I broke OPSEC and called her quickly from the CQ number and said, "Hey, I'm not coming home. Watch TV. That's all I can say. Your birthday cake is in the trunk." And she had to get over there with a neighbor, get the car. I left the keys at the staff duty desk for the battalion, and I deployed. But basically, California National Guard, blah, blah, blah. The Marines were the first to hit it. They were within 24 hours. And then basically, Garden Plot Straight Joint Task Force Los Angeles consisted of about 10,000 guardsmen, 1,500 Marines from Camp Pendleton, 2,000 soldiers from the 2nd Brigade, 7th Infantry Division Light. I was in the 2nd of the 27th Infantry. And the entire 40th Infantry Division National Guard actually deploy. And we put out outposts, started intel, and supported law enforcement. As we go along with this, I'll explain a few things I did see. Some fast facts over the riots, the 5 days of the riots. 50 people died and 2,000 injured. It destroyed or damaged 1,000 buildings, which cost $1 billion. Let's try to get that out in English. 12,000 people were arrested. For a basic timeline, the 3rd of March, King was beaten. The 4th of March, the gentleman will learn more in the second segment, Heroes and Villains. or third, yeah, second segment, sorry, second segment, he delivers the tape. King is released on March 7th. Officers are indicted on the 15th. May 10th, the grand jury refuses to indict 17 officers who stood by. November 26, 1991, Superior Court Judge Stanley Weisberg orders the trial of four officers. On April 29th, the four white LAPD officers are acquitted of beating King. The riots began instantly. Florence and Normandy is where we're going to spend a lot of our time during this podcast, but actually the talk on city downtown police department was under siege, most of it. April 30th to May 4th, it was a dusk dawn curfew. May 1st, King made that emotional "Can't We Get Along" statement. The 3rd, we are all patrolling the streets. The 4th of August, 92, a federal judge grand jury returns indictment against Kuhn, Powell, Wind, and Breezno on charges of violating civil rights. On the 21st, a commission headed by FBI and CIA Director William Webster concluded that LAPD and City Hall leaders did not plan appropriately. February 25th, the trial begins. The 17th of April, 93, federal jury convicts all of them. Two of them, Kuhn and Powell. Wind and Breezno are found not guilty. No disturbances happen. August 4th, U.S. District Court Judge John Davies, sentenced Stacy Kuhn and Powell to 30 months. April 19th, they give $3.8 million in compensation to King, who won a 56. In 94, June 1st, he was awarded zero for punitive damage from the civil trial. And April 12th, King writes his own autobiography. This is 2012. And then in June 17th, 2012, he's found dead in his swimming pool in Rialto, California. So I want to go into the forgotten victims. I'm not going to talk a lot about what the police and stuff did. And to do that, I'd like to play a soundbite first. It's rather long. It's some helicopters, some on-the-scene stuff. But it's pretty much all we're going to, you know, cover, which is the Florence and Normandy intersection.
Damian Williams is one of four people who will be arrested for their alleged actions here. Alicia Maldonado is caught in the intersection. She is pelted as Antoine Miller grabs her purse from the car. Henry Watson, his shirt apparently stained with blood, searches for victims. Takeo Hirata is on his way home from work. Rioters attack his car and bring it to a stop. He is beaten and robbed. Meanwhile, the looting goes on. Larry Tarvan is hit in the head with a rock. Rioters pull him from his truck and beat him. The crowd robs his truck as he lies in the road. No one helped him. That is happening, with all of America watching, police are never dispatched to the area. Later, they will claim they had no means of communicating with the riot command center. Reginald Denny is pelted with objects through his window as he tries to pass through the intersection. Davian Williams is seen hitting him on the head with a brick. Henry Watson steps on his neck and head. Jerry Williams delivers an exuberant flying kick. Some African-Americans will compare the Denny beating to what happened to Rodney King. Some will consider the four men heroes. Most see them as thugs.
By 6:30, we were on the air live, and the rest was history.
Oh, look at that. Terrible. And there's no police presence down here. They will.
Football Monroe Williams took this brick and literally pitched it into the side of Mr. Denny's skull, causing 97 fractures. Mr. Denny nearly died. His brain started swelling. He had a subdural bleed. He had minutes to live. The man that threw the brick at Reginald Denny's head, his name was Football Monroe Williams. And this is the actual brick that was used against Mr. Denny. This brick was used at time of trial. It was given to me by the prosecution after the trial. During our live broadcast, I was told to leave the area by my television station because we were being fired at. My helicopter sustained $154,000 damage during the LA riots. Gunshots and also debris that was sucked through the jet engine. It was quite costly. But I wasn't going to leave. We flew for 3 days, literally 24 hours a day, to keep the public aware of what was going on, to warn them and keep them out of harm's way.
A block east of this scene, and he's driving eastbound. I'm going right over the top of him, so I'm going to lose him now. But it's the first law enforcement activity I've seen out here.
They obviously have thought about this. They anticipated this. They, meaning the LAPD, they obviously have plans to deal with it. And as we said before, they've allocated $1 million to overtime in case things like this happen. So they are obviously carrying out a pre-thought-out plan.
In the meantime, don't go near this area, South Central Los Angeles at Florence and Normandy, because there is still no police presence there, and a lot of people trying to get through that intersection have been assaulted with rocks and bottles and sticks. So as long as it's an ongoing situation, you best advise to stay clear.
Can we, Ann, and help me out here, briefly recap what we've seen? We've seen a liquor store and a gas station continue to be looted. Mm-hmm. We've seen,
Dave, can you go back to the
we've seen rocks and I presume bottles and various things thrown at cars, school buses, RTD buses.
Did you see it, Dave?
Two people dragged from cars in this intersection.
Okay, Dave,
one woman dragged from her car and ended up on the street. And then we saw the driver of that truck pulled out of his car and beat up. Now, there's another car stopped.
That car just moved into that intersection, and as it did, you can see what's happening to it right now.
Are there still people inside that car?
The black car,
yes.
The second lane? Yes. And is.
Oh, my goodness. Well, it looks like he's...
It's like you're getting out of there,
or right. She is going to get out of there if they can.
But still, there are things being thrown at the car, as you can see. We can't hear. I guess you can't hear either if guns are being fired or not.
No, and we wouldn't hear those things. If we were fortunate enough or unfortunate enough, we might see muzzle flashes, but we wouldn't hear anything.
Somebody just tossed a bottle rocket.
The people that are being allowed to drive through this intersection are really in great danger. And I echo what Ann said. I wonder why that the streets around there have not been blocked off as yet. You would think that they would not expose seemingly innocent people driving through this intersection in their cars to this kind of violence.
Well, hopefully the word is getting out on all the radio stations in town, too. If you drive and listen to your car radio, you get the word to stay away from this area. The rest of the neighborhood is perfectly serene and calm. As near as we can see, the blocks that surround this intersection are quiet. It would seem to just be...
...with the verdict. Sergeant Stacy Kuhn said only read about it.
That's a structure fire, is it not, Ron?
I'm sorry, you're blocked by another radio. Say it again, Paul.
That looks like a structure fire to me.
It sure does. It looks like a storefront, actually, Paul. We're going to move in here nice and slow. We've got a couple other helicopters with us, and we'll take a look at it. You can see that this thing is just really involved. Now,
that's
we've got units from the fire department that are just arriving in front of it. If Dave will pull back just a little bit, you'll be able to see the fire truck, the ladder truck coming. I see another engine behind it, and I see some paramedic truck, it looks like. Now, also, right behind those, I see about seven LAPD police cars. If we pan just a little bit to the left, Dave, you'll see a whole line of police cars that have their red lights on, and it looks like they're setting up, or at least blocking the street at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And what they could be doing is just making sure that the firemen can...
Be a firefighter or a police officer, their lives in extreme danger tonight, and our hats off to them, and we... respect them, and we appreciate everything they're doing.
And we're working on a map to show you the spots around Los Angeles where you want to keep your family away tonight. If you're going to head out to church, you should know that the First AME Church is packed to the gills, but they're coalescing there to discuss the issues of the day and to share their thoughts and their feelings and their anger, mainly. Mm-hmm. Earlier today... We're going to stay on the shot for chopper, too.
I see a sign on the side of the building that says TVs and VCRs. And we're told that something else major developing right now. Back to Parker Center. Jody Baskerville, is it still peaceful there? Jody Baskerville, can you hear me? Well, we've lost that shot. We're told something is happening at Parker Center. There have been several hundred demonstrators outside there. Earlier, they were pelting riot police with rocks and bottles. Then cooler heads prevailed, and they backed away. We're told right now by our producer that something is happening there. We're not sure exactly what. Apparently, we're not ready for that live shot. We'll go to it just momentarily. In the meantime...
Pull away. The car pulled up to us, started screaming at us and throwing full bottles of beer at our truck. And needless to say, we turned the corner and got out of there quickly. And it's
Robert,
it's,
what were they screaming?
Long live Rodney King, justice for Rodney King, and other things that we probably can't say. And obviously, the anger, the hostility, the bitterness, those feelings are there, and it seems that the anger is building.
Could you tell if they were reacting to you as a member of the news media or if they were reacting to you as a white man?
It's hard to tell. Maybe we look like police officers in a truck. I don't know. It's just as soon as they looked at us, I mean, you saw it. I tried to smile and wave, and I saw the anger and the fury in their eyes and their faces, and the beer bottles came flying, and the screams, came with them.
Left you last. We moved east of the freeway, and we're near Martin Luther King. Probably three blocks east of the freeway, and we have a fire probably on Main Street. It could be Main or Broadway, and at this fire, Los Angeles City fire units are present and are battling it. I see a good half a dozen rigs there. The fire has gone through the roof, but they are protecting the exposures on both sides. It's been burning for quite some time. The smoke is white. It isn't that big black smoke that you have when the fire first breaks through. And they do have water on it. It does appear that the exposure just to the east there, that it could be on fire as well. But there are one, two, three, four, five, at least six fire units on the scene. And here, people are standing around and watching. There's no running. This is the normal crowd you'd have that would stand around and watch a fire. And it is, as I said, it is this one also now is burning through the roof. Firemen are in there and putting quite a bit of water onto it. The significant thing of this fire is where we were talking at another location. That's a good a mile or maybe even even 2 miles from the scene where we were a short time ago.
Okay, Stan, we have to go right back to Ron, and we'll return to you in just a minute. Let's go to Ron Olson. Ron?
Well, Hal, the police have formed up a line down at the end of the lot here at Parker Center where the burning kiosk is, and they were making a movement to come through the area and sweep it, and then they stopped. This kiosk now burning furiously, and I don't know, the LAPD came in a line, they moved up, and then they moved into a position and stopped, and they're holding the line now down by the burning kiosk. And we're going to stay in our position as long as we can, but if the police sweep through here, we're liable to get swept out with this crowd. Again, that kiosk really going up now, and as I noted earlier, Hal, fortunately, there is nothing in the immediate area of the kiosk that could catch fire from it.
Okay, Ron, we want to go back to Stan Chambers. You stand by there. We'll get back to you in just a few moments. Let's go up to Stan, if we can, in the helicopter. Stan, I just want to mention to you that we have spoken with LAC Fire Rep Bob Collis. Now, he says that LA...
where they have taken off back, I guess presumably back to their homes. I've seen women with children rushing inside these stores. It's the ABC Market and the Sunny Swap Meet here at the corner of Vernon and Vermont, South Central Los Angeles, just about a quarter mile south of the Coliseum.
Bob, I only see about 10 people there. Has that crowd been larger a little earlier tonight?
Yes. Yes. We've been over this scene for about 9 minutes, and there were a number of other people here. I think the presence overhead might have scared off some people. An International Guard helicopter has made a flight over the area, for your information. What their surveillance flight was for, I'm not sure.
Well, Bob, that may tie into something we had earlier, and that is that Governor Wilson has been in touch with Mayor Bradley and offered whatever resources are needed. Not saying that the helicopter has anything to do with that, but they may be making their own aerial survey of the situation as well.
That's right. Now, another fire has started about a quarter mile to the east, about an eighth of a mile east of the Coliseum now. So what you're seeing here is just really a groups and groups of people out of control without the fear of the LAPD stopping them. Oh, there goes another fire. Well, we're up to, we're counting up to 13 fires right now, and they would all be considered theater alarm blazes or better. We're normally 8 or more fire units on scene. I'm going to...
But the only one that there were fire units on the scene that we've seen so far is the one that was near the Coliseum. He said just east of the Coliseum. The others, no fire presence. Is that right?
That's right. And I think what we're having is, I'm listening to some of the LAPD frequencies, and there are so many fire reports and attempted arson reports that it's stretching.
Police Department, have you tried to coordinate your response with the LAPD so that you can go in under protection of the police?
We're coordinating our law enforcement, which is our sheriff's department, and they are assisting us in plans at this time at other fire stations, and they're getting plans together to attack this fire.
Let me just try to clarify something. You say L.A. County.
I know some of that's muffled, but it covers the video that was taken from the street from the thugs and the aircraft. So, we all know about Reginald Denny. We're going to talk a little bit about it, but this is another article talking about the other people. It's the forgotten victims from Florence and Normandy. Fidel Lopez's skull was smashed that fateful day, yet it is Reginald Denny that sticks with our collective consciousness. Fidel Lopez who was savagely beaten in Florence and Normandy. They show a picture of him. He's much older now, of course. When I knocked on a door in Torrance on Tuesday afternoon, I had just about given up on finding Fidel Lopez. 20 years ago, at the corner of Florence and Normandy, the self-employed construction worker was dragged from his truck and viciously beaten just minutes after the same vengeance was served on Reginald Denny during the L.A. riots. Both assaults were captured on video that was played over and over, nauseating for the sheer brutality and the inhumane, triumphant swagger of the attackers. Lopez was knocked to the ground, repeatedly kicked as he lay on the pavement. One man hoisted a car stereo over his head and smashed it down on his skull. Lopez was doused with gasoline. His ear was nearly severed. He was stripped and spray-painted black as he lay semi-conscious. He might well have died if it wasn't for the arrival of Reverend Benny Newton, who appeared on the hellish scene like an angel, raised a Bible, and warned the rioters, "Kill him, and you have to kill me too." For all of that, it's Denny who remains in the collective consciousness when we think about Florence and Normandy. We know Denny was nearly killed, that his recovery is long and painful, and that he has chosen to keep to himself. But with all the riot coverage lately, I wondered what had become of Fidel Lopez and why I couldn't find a single story about him after 1993. Over the next couple of hours, as he talked to him, Lopez filled me in on his difficulty recovering and the year-long challenges of reestablishing his business. Not only was he badly injured that day in 92, but his truck was torched and his tools stolen by the thugs, who also made off with $2,000 in cash that he was going to deposit at the bank from his business. Lopez made no appeal for sympathy, but he still finds it unfathomable that the LAPD commanders ordered officers not to intervene, leaving him and others at the mercy of the mob that pounded and plundered at will. Lopez believes he would have been set ablaze after being drenched with gas if not for Newton. He and the pastor and ex-convict whose own redemption had led him to minister to wayward souls would later become friends. "I even went to his church," Lopez says. Lopez still has a U-shaped scar and dent at the top of his forehead. His ribs still hurt from the kicks he took, and he still gets the occasional dizzy spells. He said doctors long ago told him there could be permanent loss of equilibrium from the rattling in his brain. And I think the thing that killed me about the whole thing is if you actually go back and research this stuff, there's also Korean guy. Same thing happened to him. Beaten. And as we get into the heroes, African-Americans walked on the street and saved him. Had it not been for those two African-Americans for Denny, he would have been dead. But others came and saved these gentlemen. And it shows how different race relations are in the country. Even though there's still rifts between tribes, so to speak. I hate to say it that way. In our current world, it's whites that are pulled out of their car and beaten. The media doesn't cover it anymore because it fits their new agenda, which is the same agenda that's always been that blacks are treated so poorly in our country. They're just so poorly treated, even though there was a black president, but whatever. Here's another one from Katie Turr's parents. Once again, Barb and Marquia, and now, of course, Bob is her second mother. In the early evening of April 29th, 92, thousands of Angelenos were frantically trying to track down family members, but watching KCOP-TV's exclusive coverage of the mayhem at Florence and Normandy. Jerry Garrard knew exactly where his daughter was just a couple of hours after Simi Valley jury acquitted all four officers of Rodney King beating trial. Marika Tour was giving her father and the rest of the world a bird-eyed view of the L.A. riots unfolding in real time. Hanging out the side of the helicopter, she trained the lens of her gyro-stabled video cam on arson fires, smashed glass, looters laden with everything from beer to paper towels, guns going off, motorists dragged from their cars and kicked and beaten until their heads were coursing blood. Gerard had picked up little Jamie and Katie Tour at Santa Monica Airport and taken them to the Marina del Rey apartment, so at least they were safe with him and their grandmother. But thanks to Marika's husband, Bob, the hotshot news pilot who routinely plunged himself and his wife into harm's way, Gerard's grandkids could soon be orphans. Gerard called into the cell phone wired into the helicopter. "I want my daughter out." "Sure, Jerry, anything," Bob responded. Crowded in the cockpit was Marika and Bob, who transitioned to female. Last year's now Zoe Tour was a backup pilot and their sound man. Bob also brought along an attorney to intervene should the LAPD order him to leave the area and try to arrest him. A needless precaution since around the time of the arrival, they had just pulled out because of the local division commander, which we'll talk about in a second. Bob assumed his usual on-air persona. He began delivering his commentary. His tone and his choice of words were precise and understand, providing leeway for a steady, dramatic build. In terms of police presence, there's none, just violence here. We up here in the air are not immune to it. People have been firing up at us from below. Fortunately, we're a small target in the big sky. As Marinka zoomed in on a construction worker, Fidel Lopez, Bob lost his composure. If Lopez would become the forgotten, beaten victim at Florence and Normandy, it wasn't for lack of live coverage. Now they're pulling the driver out, and they're kicking the driver and beating the driver. The driver's only mistake was entering the area. He's been kicked in the head, and he's lying in the street. Okay, this is it. This is it. Approaching the Lopez phone and bleeding body, an assailant raised a car radio and crushed his skull with it. This is tragic. This man is unconscious in the street, and people keep coming up and throwing things at this poor individual. When Marika, or whatever the hell her name is, shifted her camera towards Reginald Denny, the truck driver had already been torn from the wheel. The dump truck was under attack. Blood turned his white shirt red. As he tried to pull his body off the pavement, Denny was kicked, struck with a claw hammer, and hit the head with a piece of medical equipment. Damian Football Williams seemed to be playing with for Marika's camera as he hurled a brick at the victim's head, then pointed a jeering finger and did a victory dance. I used to be a medic, Bob told his audience, and to see this happen and not be able to help these people is indescribable. He had packed a little license 45 and 9 mil for the flight, and he now opened an off-air debate over whether they should shoot at one of the assailants who looked to be beating Lopez and Denny to death. The idea was quickly voted down. Shooting a moving target from the air would have been insane. I would have had to land the helicopter and we'd surely be fired upon. And they'd be throwing rocks and bottles at the rotor system. Then if we were shot down, we'd have to find a house to barricade ourselves. It would be up to good Samaritans on the ground to shield the victims, rush them to hospitals, and save their lives. Around 3 a.m., the terrorists touched down and drove to their home in Pacific Palisades for a shower and a two-hour nap. From Thursday to Saturday, they were in there, widening the area in coverage of fires, looting, assaults, and murder sprees throughout the city. Then it was off to New York to film a segment on Today's Show. When they returned home, their children were waiting. Katie, then 9, had watched the KCOP broadcast of Florence and Normandy with her grandfather, but hadn't shared his concern over the parents' safety. I didn't understand it fully at the time, Katie remembers. What they did for a living seemed more of an adventure than anything else. That's how they made their bones. That's how Katie Tour, also having Keith Olbermann's penis in her, has gotten her jobs. Another article I found was Worlds Collide at Florence and Normandy. This breaks down the Denny thing, and it's pretty shocking. Some of these articles, when you read them, some are from 98, some are from 92, some are recent, and I'll point them out, but you can tell the liberal press didn't want to call it what it was, which is out-and-out sheer anarchy, and what they did was horrible, but they didn't want to say it. I'll allude in the heroes and villains segment. Some of these people are just assholes. Denny entered the intersection of Florence and Normandy at 6:46. He noticed from his cab high vantage point that people were taking items from a truck in front of him. Briefly considered making a U-turn, but his truck lacked power steering. Since he knew his cargo was of no value, Denny raised and he could tiptoe across the intersection and get on down the road. But then he heard people shouting at him to stop. Rocks flew through his window. Denny would not remember the events that followed his volley of rocks, but they formed a tableau of brutality that much of America would be unable to forget. As Denny's truck slowed to enter the intersection, a young man named Antonio Miller yanked open the door of the cab, allowing others to pull Denny to the street. Another young man named Henry Watson held Denny's head down with his foot. Someone else kicked him in the belly. A man in a Malcolm X t-shirt held a 5-pound piece of medical equipment from the looted truck at Denny's head and hit him 3 times with a claw hammer. The most damaging blow was administered by 19-year-old Damian Williams, who at point-blank range turned a slab of concrete. People called it a brick. It wasn't. At Denny's head. It struck Denny on the right temple and knocked him unconscious. Williams did a victory dance over the hapless man, imitating a football receiver had caught a touchdown pass. He then flashed the sign of the 8-tray gangster Crips and gleefully pointed out Denny's crumpled figure to a news helicopter. Gang member Anthony Brown spit on Denny and walked away with Williams, leaving the trucker bleeding and unconscious. Not a single police officer was in sight. That's the general theme of all of this, and it's true. What the police did was wrong, but almost all the press I've read on this, which is all left-leaning press, well, the police there, this wouldn't happen. It's not the people who actually did it. It's not their fault. It's the police's fault. But far from inventing some phony flashpoint, the media actually helped fill the vacuum left by the police. According to department doctrine, the LAPD should have sealed off the intersection. Instead, the task of warning motorists away from the area was left to radio and television, especially to the alert helicopter pilots who witnessed the Denny beating. But the media could not help drivers like Denny, who were not listening to the news. Television coverage of Florence and Normandy did fail to show the reality of the Los Angeles riots in significant ways. For one thing, because of all the assailants and none of the victims shown were black, the coverage may have contributed to demonic view of African Americans. Yeah. This is from 98. Nothing's changed. You know, 20 years later, nothing has changed. As the helicopters moved from one incident of violence to another, they necessarily neglected much that happened in the wake of the attacks. So the vivid television accounts for Florence and Normandy inevitably missed or minimized brave and humane actions of African Americans who were appalled by the assailants. Donald Jones, an off-duty firefighter, rescued Sei Choi Choi, a Chinese immigrant who had been pulled from the Ford Fiesta and beaten. That's the first beating, actually. And they are being covered now in the many documentaries that are being done. Benny Newton, an ex-convict who ran an inner-city ministry, threw himself across the unconscious body of Fidel Lopez, saying, "Kill him and you have to kill me." Bobby Green and Titus Murphy, Terry Barnett, and Lee Yule, four black friends who didn't know Reginald Denny, watched on television as he was dragged from his truck. They piled into a car, reached the intersection, and within 15 minutes got Denny to the hospital, which saved his life. Despite all these warnings, the Blue Ribbon Commission that investigated the riots, meaningful preparation for the trouble that followed was the verdict. There was no citywide planning effort to specific coordination with county, state, and federal authorities, concluded the commission. Later in the article, not long afterwards, five young black males made a beer run to Payless Liquor and Deli in Florence and Dalton Avenues, a Korean-owned store three short blocks west of Normandy that was known in the neighborhood as Mr. Lee's. The beverage of choice was Old English 800, the malt liquor consumed by Rodney King in quantity before his fateful high-speed drive 14 months earlier. At the store, the youths each scooped up four or five bottles of malt liquor and walked towards the entrance where the path was blocked by David Lee, son of the owner. One of the youths struck Lee in the head with a bottle and two other hurls bottle at the glass door of the store, shattering it. "This is for Rodney King," one yelled. From behind a bulletproof counter, Lee's father, Samuel, pushed a silent alarm button that alerted the 77th Street station of the robbery. It was 4:17 p.m., and one of the deadliest urban riots in the nation had begun. Looking at a lot of these documentaries, that's what they're saying. Once they hit the liquor stores, kind of like Ferguson, mob rule took over. In their origins, however, the riots were neither a gang conspiracy or revolt against harsh conditions, but a cry of black rage. The riots were indeed for Rodney King, as the youth said when they hurled a bottle, and they were for Latinish Harlins, whose name was invoked by sine wave demonstrator Florence Avenue, in the systematic destruction of the Korean-owned stores throughout the riots. The rebellious blacks who took to the streets in the aftermath of verdicts shared with Lieutenant Mullen the belief that the judicial system had failed the people of Los Angeles. "We got out of there." Officer James Lumpkin and Rick Banks were having a snack at a bakery down the block and across the street from Payless Liquor when it was robbed. They felt at home in the neighborhood, for Banks had been raised a few blocks on Lumpkin and nearby Compton. Both officers were African-Americans, stood out in the crowd with Banks towering 6'6 and the other 6'5. When they heard that Mr. Lee's was being robbed, they ran to a liquor store to find the robbers had fled. As they were finished their report, they received a radio call of disturbance 100 yards away at Florence and Halldale. Officer John Ayala and partner Ty Henson were in the patrol car near the corner of Florence and Hilldale, a block back west of Normandy, when they heard the same call. Reaching the scene at 5:23, they found a slender young black man with a goatee and shaved head swinging a silver and black aluminum baseball bat at the windshield of a Cadillac with two white men inside. Black youths cheered on the bat-wielder, who did not immediately stop at the sight of the police car. "God damn, look at this guy," Ayala, who was amazed that the youths seemed undeterred by the presence of police. But when Ayala got out of the car, the youths fled, pursued on foot by two officers who put in a call for assistance that brought Banks and Lumpkin. The chase ended in an alley behind an apartment complex known as a favorite hangout of the 8-Tray gangster Crips. Ayala arrested the young man with a baseball bat at 5:27. A crowd had assembled, drawing the attention of TV news crew. Sergeant Tom Tavares would remember the crowd as fairly quiet until the camera arrived. People then began chanting Rodney King. And he detected a palpable mood change. Got ugly, he said. It was the first call after the verdicts. We were the friendly neighborhood cops 1 minute, the next minute we were lunch meat. It didn't take a genius to figure out we needed to do something. We got out of there. It was now past 5:30, and even the most sanguine officers in the 77th Division sensed that the neighborhood was ripe for a riot that would pull the LAPD to the test. The concerns were not shared at LAPD headquarters. Chief Gates activated the Emergency Operations Center in a sub-basement of City Hall across the street from Parker Center at 355. But this activation was just a formality. In fact, all that appeared to have happened was the doors were open, the lights turned on, and coffee pot plugged in. Bradley had watched the verdicts in his office, shaking with anger. The mayor fury had not subsided 2 hours later when he appeared on television and proclaimed the senseless verdicts had rendered him speechless. He went into his whole thing, blah, blah, blah. Bradley then issued what he afterward described as a plea for calm. While saying it was necessary to express our great frustration and our profound outrage, our anger, we must do so in many things. Many ways that bring honor to ourselves and our community. Let's not bury the gains we have made and blah, blah, blah. Bradley condemnation of the verdict was delivered with an emotional intensity unusual for the mayor. Later he explained that he had not spoken forcefully, would not have had the credibility to call for a peaceful reaction. I would have been laughed out of the town if I said, just be cool, don't react. The verdict was something that was quite appropriate. Near Florence and Normandy, outnumbered officers and vulnerable patrol cars with bands of rock-throwing youths. The first police target were four officers in two cars who responded late to the Allah call for help and arrived at the scene where the youth with the baseball bat had been arrested. They proceeded through Florence-Normandy intersection where people on the sidewalk yelled obscenities at them. Officer Phyllis D'Elia, driving the lead car, tried desperately to make the light but was blocked by a truck. Suddenly, the cars were showered with rocks and bottles. Officer Timothy McGrath in the second car put out a radio call. Officers need help. We're taking rocks and bottles at Florence and Normandy. McGrath, an African-American and former gang officer who grew up in South Central, was considered an expert on the A-Tray crypt. He spotted a youth approaching the passenger side of his car with a brick-sized stone in both hands. McGrath jumped out and drew his gun. He recognized the youth as Seandel Daniels, a 16-year-old gang associate. Daniels cocked an arm and McGrath commanded, "Don't do it. Drop the rock." Daniels looked at McGrath's gun, dropped the rock, and fled. Within 5 minutes, 18 patrol cars and more than 30 officers had reacted to reach the scene in response to McGrath's call. One of the first to arrive was Sergeant Sam Arazi, a beefy Asian American. He found people milling around McGrath's police car. When Daniels reappeared carrying more stones, McGrath identified him as one of the youths who had been throwing rocks at the police car. "We're not going to tolerate that," Arazi said. "He's mine." He then set out in pursuit of Daniels and fled up the alley between 71st Street and Normandy, northwest of the intersection. McGrath put in another call and brought Air 3, the police helicopter. The pursuing officers grabbed Daniels as he climbed a chain-link fence, and they handcuffed him in the yard. "I can't breathe," Daniels yelled. "Don't do him like that. You don't have to do him like that," yelled the crowd. "Don't make this another Rodney King," a black officer said. As Arrays turned towards the crowd with the handcuffed Daniels, it seemed to him that there were millions of people, not only on the sidewalk, but in the middle of the street. The scene was now that Sergeant Strong would describe as a confusing mess. Officer Perry Alvarez would remember it as chaos, constant chaos, with flying objects everywhere. Four helicopters from local television station and police helicopter circled above. They tried to form a skirmish line around the car so the arresting men could be taken away, but their passive behavior reflected the legacy of the Rodney King case more than proactive reputation of the LAPD. As they formed the line, the officers could see they were being videotaped by two black men at the edge of the crowd. The scenes portrayed on these amateur videos would show the police in defensive postures. Instead of locking arms and aggressively jabbing people back, they stand the crowd control technique, standard crowd control technique. Many officers stood passively with hands on their sides, and some officers tried to calm individuals in the crowd. Several officers did not even have batons. Lieutenant Mullen, the ranking officer, had driven to the scene from the 77th Street station. "I found utter chaos, an intersection that was uncontrolled. The officers were being subjected to bricks and huge pieces of concrete to boards, to flying objects. Most of the police had no helmets. They had no bulletproof vests, no tear gas, no face shield. I think we're going to have to use deadly force. We could have a massacre here, so I ordered a pullout. I want everybody out of the area of Florence and Normandy," Mullen said. The officers obeyed, and that was the catalyst. That was the catalyst. That one officer who, to this day, and I watched him yesterday on a show, literally defended his views and, just like everybody else in this mess, blamed somebody else. He blamed Gates. It was Gates' fault. It was all Gates' fault. And I had a hard time watching it because that's the same stuff that happened to us. Fast forward, we're in there. We do our first recon. We get out of the cars on a leader's recon. We get surrounded because by that time, the people knew they can do whatever the fuck they wanted. They could do whatever they wanted. And nobody was going to stop it. The police were just in paralysis, which is where we're at today. You look at this and you fast forward to Dallas, and that's exactly what you get. A defensive posture, very passive. You get a bunch of officers killed in the street. Because any way you want to cut this, they were dealing with thugs. It was a mob. And I don't care how many Democrats want to sit here and tell me it was brought on by the system. This is what you get with Democratic mayors. What Mayor Bradley did was a precursor to what was done in Baltimore. We'll give him a part of the town just to burn it to the fucking ground. Just let him burn it. Because we want to feel for them. I don't care what you think or how you think you've been wronged or treated inappropriately or whatever, it doesn't give you a right to hurt other people, to destroy property, and to nearly kill people. Doesn't give you a right. Doesn't. So there's the steps that gets us to the riot, and now we go into heroes and villains. All right, we're not going to go into the Denny stuff. We kind of already talked about it. But we will talk a little more about the heroes. After the beating, various men threw beer bottles at the unconscious Denny. Gary Williams approached Denny and rifled through his pockets. Lance Parker stopped near Denny and attempted to shoot the fuel tanks of his truck. That was something we didn't get from the previous story. Bobby Green, a truck driver, Titus Murphy, Terry Barnett, and Lee Ueli, a dietitian who had been watching the event on TV, came to Denny's aid. Denny eventually regained consciousness and dragged himself back in the cab, driving away from the scene slowly and erratically. Green himself, a truck driver, boarded Denny's truck and took over the wheel, driving him to a hospital. At the time that Green took over, Denny was on the brink of losing consciousness and suffered a seizure shortly thereafter. Paramedics who attended Denny said he came very close to death. The skull was fractured in 91 places and pushed into his brain. His left eye was so badly dislocated that would have fallen in the sinus cavity had not surgeons replaced the crushed bone with a piece of plastic. A permanent crater remains in his head despite effort to correct it. Denny had to undergo years of rehabilitative therapy, and his speech and the ability to walk were permanently damaged. So let's talk about the heroes before we get into the villains. I researched some of these because you'll find way more, all right, about the poor, misunderstood youths who literally were forced to do this, all right? They were made that way. It's not their fault. The first one is George Holliday. He is the guy who took the video and put it out. Some people will say, well, why is he a hero? Because he caused the whole thing. He did the right thing. What they did to Reginald Denny was wrong. Reginald Denny was a fucking piece of shit. He was a piece of shit his whole life. And he was a thug and a crip and all that shit. But beating the fuck out of the guy in the middle of the street was crazy. Anybody on this planet who saw it that time, I saw it because I was in California, went, whoa, what the fuck? I mean, you tased him, you beat him. I mean, for God's sake, let it go. Titus Murray, Good Samaritan, remembers the L.A. riots. 20 years later, I had to do something. It is one of the most unforgettable and horrifying images from the L.A. riots. A truck driver is randomly pulled from his truck and beaten to death. Blah, blah, blah. Reginald Denny. The beating was broadcast live. Blah, blah, blah. By the end, okay, we've already talked about it. Sorry, I'm trying to get to it. Something inside me said, get up, you have to do something. When Murphy and his girlfriend, Terry Barnett, arrived at Denny's truck, Lee Uel was already there and the cab comforting Denny. Murphy then found himself facing off with a large stranger on a day when every stranger posed a threat. He said they were looking at each other through the truck window. We both asked each other, what are you going to do? He goes, what are you going to do? And I say, what are you going to do? Murphy said. At first, Murphy thought the man could be a rioter who had come to finish off Denny. He thought he may have taken him on, and if I didn't do that, whatever I had to do was something fast. Then came the moment of relief. He said to me at the moment that he was a truck driver. It was Bobby Green, the fourth person that came to help Denny. Murphy said the four never introduced themselves, never discussed the game plan. They just went into action. It was like we were meant to do that. It's like we were on a mission. Everything just fell in place, just like it was supposed to, Murphy said. The windshield of Denny's truck was shattered, so Murphy hung off the side of the truck and directed Green as he drove 80,000-pound truck 3 long miles to Daniel Freeman Hospital. The journey seemed like it took forever. Murphy said he was only concerned about Denny's welfare. The victim was inside the truck, bleeding profusely. Murphy said he did have one moment when he was scared. A carload of people carrying guns and sticks approached. He worried that they would go after Denny, so he made a strategic decision to act like a rioter himself. He said he began beating on the hood of the truck, claiming it as his own so that the rioters would think he got that and would go find something else to destruct. Shortly after, Murphy saw a patrol car and several officers. He had a moment of hope and help had finally arrived. Murphy said he made kind contact with the officers and they just continued on. We were on our own. Murphy now lives in Escondido where his life is all about his wife and kids. And he's a great man. Arthur Washington, who is a camera operator, saw him on a segment the other day. There's no articles on him, but he was filming it for a news agency, and he went and saved a bunch of people. Bobby Green, as we just heard about. And I won't break it down. It's the same story. On the 10th anniversary, he told Los Angeles Times, I could tell my kids the color's just on the outside, not the inside. To me, I turned justice around and showed them that all black people ain't the same as you think. Which is a pretty amazing story. Because he's a big dude, big. And then Mr. Newton, a black minister, saved many a person by shielding his body. He was the pastor. I don't know if he's alive or dead. I researched and I couldn't find anything on the pastor. Couldn't find it. What I did find was a shitload of articles about what would be called the LA 4. First article, LA 4 trial. This is from 92. They dog Gates, da-da-da-da-da. Gates himself arrested Damian Williams, while Henry Watts and Antonio Miller were arrested by other officers. Soon afterwards, Gary Williams gave himself up to the police, having stolen Denny's wallet. The arrested three were suspects to be part of the gang of 8-Trey gangster Crips. Gary Williams pled guilty to charges of robbery and assault in spring of 93 and was sentenced to 3 years in jail. Judge John W. Outerdirk granted Miller a separate trial on the grounds that the strong evidence against Watson and Damian Williams could harm his case. The two, in addition to assault charges, were charged with attempted murder. Damian Williams was also charged with aggravated mayhem. Edie M.O. Fowle was a defense attorney for Damian Williams and Earl C. Broadley was a defense attorney for Watson. On Wednesday, July 28, 93, Watson and Williams' trial began. The two were charged with the assault of Denny, as well as 5 other motorists and 2 firefighters who were driving past the intersections of Florence and Normandy shortly after the start of the L.A. riots. On trial, Denny faced his assaulter for the first time after they assaulted him. On August 12, 93, a jury of 5 whites, 3 blacks, 3 Latinos, and 1 Asian was chosen. As in the Rodney King police trial, the prosecution relied heavily on video shot by a third-party helicopter. They also planned to build up a portrait of Watson and Williams as criminal antisocials and beyond likelihood of rehabilitation or redemption. What is that? Insanity by gang relation? On Thursday, August 19th, Lawrence Morrison, deputy district attorney, delivered the opening statement. A week later, the videotape of the beating was shown. The doctors who treated Denny testified, describing the wounds and their efforts to repair them, and were followed by witnesses of the beating. The defense was denied direct contact with the witnesses to protect their identities. In late August, Denny's rescuers testified for the prosecution. The prosecution rested on September 17, 1993. The defense began pleading on September 20th, making a case for premeditated assault. Fall began by unpremeditated assault. I'm sorry. Fall began by challenging the video evidence and portraying Williams as a victim of poverty and racism. She said broadly tried to humanize their clients. In the closing arguments, the defense attorneys claimed Williams and Watson were being used as scapegoats for the L.A. riots. The prosecution counter argued the two had knowingly tried to kill Denny and were not victims. After a few jury changes, a hung jury resulted for all charges except a felony count of mayhem for Williams and one misdemeanor assault charge for both Williams and Watson on October 18th. Watson's was then given credit for time served and was released. As the families of the defendants celebrated the lesser sentences, Denny surprisingly approached Damian Williams' mother, Georgina, and hugged her. Other family members then exchanged warm embraces and words of reconciliation with him. For weeks afterwards, public debate about racism and whether the verdict was just or unjust raged on. As the debate continued, Williams was denied bail and sentenced to a maximum of 10 years in prison on December 7th, 93 by Judge Outerdirk. Williams was released early for good behavior in 97. On December 5th, 2003, he was convicted of murdering a drug dealer in 2000. Nothing really changed. Another article, Denny's suspects are thugs to some, heroes to other. Riot's portrait of four accused in savage beatings suggests they are improbable candidates for role of revolutionaries. Depending on whom you ask, they're either vicious, this is from May 1992, gang members who deserve to spend the rest of their lives behind bars, revolutionary soldiers who sound the first shot of a racial insurrection, or decent young men who are falsely accused. One is said to be a stalwart member of the notorious eight-trade gangster Crips, while another is a quiet man whose main preoccupation is motorbikes. A third is a husband who holds down two jobs and expecting the birth of a second child. The fourth is a drifter. Today they stand accused of one of the most vicious and widely publicized beating attacks ever carried out on live TV. And they talk about all these guys. Despite their vilification by the likes of Los Angeles Police Chief Daryl Gates in certain circles, the four men are not only defended but defied. Activists and supporters have dubbed them the Los Angeles Four, compared them to Revolutionary War heroes, and characterized the attack on Denny as an act of war, not a crime. There's very deep feeling for these men, says Cecil A. King, chairman of the California chapter of Congress of Racial Equality, and that feeling is growing. Of the defendants, none has attracted more attention than Damian Williams. Police say it is Williams, 19, who's pictured on the videotape hoisting a brick, sometimes described as a piece of cinder block or a rock, and smashing on the side of Denny's head. That man then dances next to Denny's motionless body and flashes a gang sign. In a videotape filled with images of violence, there are a few moments more appalling than that one, and Williams has emerged as a central figure in approaching criminal trial. It was Williams, the youngest of the four suspects, whom Gates chose to arrest personally. Williams' lawyers admitted that their client was at Florence and Normandy intersection that evening and suggested he was drawn there by the noise of the growing commotion. Others say he was enraged by the sight of police arresting a young neighbor. In either case, the Los Angeles riots were not Williams' first brush with violence. He has an arrest record that included charges of battery, robbery, resisting a public officer, and hit and run. A copy of the search warrant left at Williams' house says police found shotgun shells and a gun among his possessions. Neighbors after neighbor said Williams was universally known as an OG, or original gangster. According to one of the court documents, Williams at 71 tattooed on his left hand a mark of the allegiance to the 71 Hustlers. Williams, who never finished high school, has a three-month-old blah, 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 blah. But far from everyone in Florence and Normandy area is fond of Williams. The eight-tray frightened many residents, and some said in an interview from behind their locked metal screens that Williams is known to play rough. Football takes its gangbanging very serious, said one person who's known Williams since he was 10. He doesn't go out and start trouble, but he doesn't run from it either. Antonio Miller, 20, grew up with Williams and is the person who police say clambered up Denny's truck and yanked the door open. To his friends and people who raised him, however, Miller's a baby-faced young man scarred by tragedy. Almost from the time he was born, Miller ricocheted between broken homes. His mother and father were never married. Blah, 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 blah. Let's get to somebody else. Let me see. Kiki Watson, who we're going to cover in a few minutes. Henry and Joycer's parents were awakened by hundreds of FBI agents and LAPD officers at 2:30 a.m. on May 12th. Since then, they hardly seem to have slept. They have appeared at each of their son's court hearings, craning to catch his eye. They have granted interviews and organized fundraisers, including a hairathon at which hairdressers donate their time. Joyce Watson, the county social worker, has used her moment in the spotlight to urge peace. And interview after interview, she patiently counsels that violence does not solve anything. She says she cannot bear to watch the videotape. The police say show her son stomping in the head and face of the truck driver. It just shows it. It's not him. Kiki Watson is a barrel-chested 27-year-old, the only one of the four suspects who's married and the only one with a steady job. He also is the only one raised by a set of parents who are married. His friends call him Keith or Kiki. The name is tattooed to his chest. Like his parents, Watson was raised a Christian, but he had not lived a life of nonviolence. Copies of his criminal record show arrests for carrying a concealed weapon, carrying a loaded firearm in a public place. In 90, while on probation for one of the firearm charges, he held up a Loomis armored car and went to jail for that offense. And his parents say that was a sobering experience. People who live near Florence and Normandy intersection say Watson emerged with a commitment to turning his life around and was respected for that. Watson married and moved to a threadbare but well-kept apartment. Their neighbors say Watsons are quiet, though a few say they worry Kiki's friends, some of whom are gangbangers. Police call Watson a gang associate, but many people say that may have more to do with where Watson grew up than whether he chose to run with gangs. In the neighborhood near Florence and Normandy, where Watson grew up, some young men joined the A-Trade Crips. But there is no escaping gang association if you spent your childhood in the community, says Watson's parents. I know football. I know Antone, said Henry Watson during a break in the court session. I've taken Antone to school. Yes, all these boys associated together, but that doesn't mean they're gangbangers. Alone among the four suspects, Gary Williams is not charged with a crime of violence. Where each of the others may spend the rest of their lives in jail. He wasn't. And they break down his life. And they make it look like it is just a terrible thing. And they are just victims. Victims of the system. They're all just victims. So, to close out, we go to more pieces of shit that just aren't those four beat up Denny. There's Alfred Sells and Tori Ellis Sr. They were on the recent History Channel, smiling, happy as fuck about the whole thing. Think it's the best thing that ever happened. And rioting and having a good time. And they talk about it like an accomplishment. Dr. Todd Boyd, professor of race and culture, I think at USC. We'll hear him in segment three. He's a race baiter extraordinaire. And I will tell you, watching him on these videos, it's like, fuck, they did the right thing. They're freedom fighters. Jim Newton, an LA Times reporter, super piece of shit. All his writing, everything about this case, they were the victims, not the people almost beat to death. Patricia Moore, a actual councilwoman from Compton, who showed up on the shows in purple hair. You'll see her if you watch any of them. And she did the same thing. This is just a result of the white man keeping people down. Kiki Watson, we talked about. They talk about him in glowing fashions in many articles. The Bridge in a Whirlwind, Henry Kiki Watson. He wrote his own book. He's part of the LA4 and still wears the LA4 button. The waters were indeed troubled, but even as the nation appeared to be ripping itself apart in many ways, it was being reborn from the many revolutions that were being given natural births to evolution. Yes, the times they were changing. Perhaps one of the clearest examples of revolution and change was found in the area of Los Angeles and called Watts, which burned in 65. And they say that leads up to this, to what they did in 93. I grew up in a two-parent home. No one can tell me what it takes to be a man because I had a man in the house all my life. I didn't come from any broken home phenomena, and most of my friends had the same foundation and structure. We had a basic of how to conduct ourselves, blah, blah, blah. I'd be lying to say that life was hard growing up because we had a real community then. There was crime and gang activity, but there was still a sense of community when I was a teenager and a sense of unity from the 60s and the Black Power movement. Watson and his two older sisters, who wore the afros and leather gear Black Panther Party, and demonstrated the black pride of the era. That's what had so much influence on how my mindset developed. I saw a lot through my family's eye because they lived through it. I listened, understood, I had an awareness, and I always knew that I wanted to be connected to the community and be on the side of the people. Black pride, black power were real to me. So somehow that actually explains why he beat the fucking shit out of a guy. But how about these? This piece of shit has a YouTube channel. I'm going to play 25 days and 23 days. They're a little long. But I want you to think in the aspects of a white person beating a black person, and then 25 years having a YouTube channel selling merchandise off that beating. If that would be acceptable in our country.
He had problems. See, that's when a person had problems. Now, you want to see a piece of shit?
Hey.
Promise? Shit.
Okay, I see what you were going to go with that.
You see what I'm saying? Promise. That was promise.
Can you dig it? Can you
Don't
dig
go
it?
Near this area.
Sorry, my name is Enya, man. My name is, they call me Endo, you know what I'm saying?
Endo.
I grew up on Normandy all my life, man. I'm born and raised, went to Raymond Avenue Elementary. Most of area, all the gangsters went to Raymond. They went to Lauren Miller, and they went to LaSalle.
Don't you, isn't it your face or your face? Or
My image? Face, Instagram. On my Instagram, go to Enya, E-N-Y-A-W,
on the video
Frank tape. Life. Videotape. I'm on the videotape. TV1, I think, had an interview. Well, no, they didn't have an interview. They was out there live. And a white dude came up to me with a microphone. I had on a Georgetown hat with a beanie. And I had on my motherfucking hoodie. I was covered up. And the motherfuckers asked me, you know, what's my take? Why I'm out here? So I told the motherfucker.
It's a white man. We killing.
But fuck the white man, you know what I'm saying? I said, fuck the white police and fuck the white man. I said, you know what I'm saying?
It's on tape.
It's all on tape on TV1. Snoop Dogg was a narrator and Ice-T was a narrator.
On the video.
TV1. And I told the motherfuckers, fuck the police, man. I said, we out here motherfuckers putting it down, you know what I'm saying? And niggas was looting out of Tom's Liquor at the time, and there was a lot of melee and all kind of chaos in the middle of the intersection. And the motherfucker rolled up on a motorcycle with a Harley Davidson. That motherfucker had a 12-gauge in his Harley Davidson and started shooting the gas pumps. Luckily, the motherfucker that was inside the gas station, Unical 76, that still exists on Florence and Normandy, he cut the motherfucking pumps off. So that's why the whole motherfucking corner didn't get blew off. You know what I'm saying? Because we would have been blowing the smithereens if we was out there.
I looked out to the east there a little bit, Dane. Something's on fire there. I don't know if it's a mattress or what, but this place is getting totally insane down here. It really is.
Well, you know, there comes a point, of course, where a point of diminishing returns, where it becomes almost impossible to move in. I mean, it'll be dark here in a couple of hours, and unless police can button down this area, or at the very least seal off this intersection a few blocks back so people know not to drive through. But, you know, these people who were going through the intersection presumably are, you know, not listening to the radio or listening to a music station and not to a news channel and have absolutely no idea that they're in danger. They may not even know the verdict in the King trial if they've been at work all day. And here they are trying to drive down the city street with no idea that they're in danger.
Let me talk. I know that
the government, whatever, can't stand us black people. He doing everything in the world to make black men be extinct. But I'm going to tell you one thing. Us black people going to survive.
Yeah.
Now, that's wrong about the black people tearing up the, you know, burning down buildings. That's wrong. But still, through it all, we going to survive. So fuck everybody. I'm off.
Can you dig it? Can you
Don't
dig
go
it?
Near this area. South Central Los Angeles.
We're getting closer to countdown to D-Day. Shit. You know what I'm saying? April 29th. You know? The intersection is going to be full of individuals. They got it blocked off and everything. You know? We tried to get a proclamation for the intersection to make it a historical landmark. You know what I'm saying? But the bureaucrats already got their hands in shit and fucking with it already. But that's all right. I'm going to keep fighting because I'm going to make that shit happen. I'm going to make Florence and Normandy a historical landmark. We're going to be on the block, as usual. You know what I'm saying? We do that every year, so you're more than welcome. No, not everybody. Well, come to the block, Raymond Stadium. Y'all know. Those who know, members only, come fuck with your boy. You know what I'm saying? Mel ain't here right now. He'll pick up the slack. You know what I'm saying? But as you can see, all these multicolored shirts, ladies. We got some. We didn't forget about y'all this year. You know what I'm saying? We got something for the ladies, too. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, take your pick.
So, what you got?
You know what I'm saying? We got some of these. It's Public Enemy. You know, and they got buttons in them, too. You know what I'm saying? We got the big Harley Davidson. I know they ain't going to like that, but it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we got some nice shit here. I mean, so. We're just trying to make it happen. You know what I mean? That's what it is. Florence Normandy Vlog TV. Man, subscribe. Hit that like button. We need more subscribers and more views.
They weren't happy about their answers. Let's play that tape.
Okay, here we go.
You don't grab the camera. You don't grab the camera. Back up. Okay, now you just got this stuff out of there?
No, he found it right outside. Somebody else
is just laying around. And what? Why do you do this?
Oh, I didn't do anything.
Because they said...
Why are they talking to me? I was walking down the street, really not wanting to be a part of anything, and all this stuff was just laying out there. Just laying everywhere. People throwing everything down there.
Do you own it? Is it your stuff? Is it your stuff?
Well, I just paid for it.
Fighters, keepers, losers, weepers. That's it, huh? That's it?
How you doing? I never went in the store. I never
went into the beat that black man's butt and let some people go. What if it was you? What if it was you? What if it was you? Now's your chance.
Okay. What if it was you?
What if you got beat like that?
I think you got beat, and so you can go steal anything out of
it. They steal. They let him go. How come they don't let all these thieves go? They let them go. What's the difference?
What about the black
man? What's the difference?
What about the black man?
But see, I never.
Well, baby, it ain't black.
It could have been a white. Why are you telling me your brother?
Don't call me brother if you don't mean it.
Baby, this is my brother. As long as you love me, as long as you are part of my life, you are my sister, you are my brother. You still come here, brother? Yes, fuck you. Fine. You have no right to take your man.
I don't want to. It's been fun. We got to run.
Action.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. Welcome for joining us once again, you know what I'm saying, here at Florence Normandy.
Worst intro ever.
Florence Normandy Vlog TV, Raymond Stadium Studio. Yeah, well, fuck you too, you know what I'm saying.
Hey,
but,
how's it going?
My boy's in the house, KBZ.
What's up with it?
Give it up.
KB, Northside 71 Hustler, you know how it is. I'm over here chilling with Kiki.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's too much, too heavy. I gave myself a better intro, you know how we popping it.
That was
what?
Garbage.
That was garbage?
Garbage. Try it again. Let's go.
Hi, my name is Frank Dreyfus.
Yes.
And have you hurt your back by the job? Have you? Is that better?
Better.
You like that shit?
Yeah, I like that.
What's
like
up, though? What's up with it, kid?
Nothing. You know, shit, I'm glad you came through. I'll be looking fly. That's a nice shirt you got on.
Oh, thank you.
Yo, you think you dapper and shit. Who the fuck told you that you knew how to dress?
The bitches.
Yeah!
Dress. Nah.
Is that right?
You know, I just picked shit off the floor and put it on. You know?
Yeah.
I do, you know?
Exactly. That's right.
I just wake up in the morning, grab shit, and say, oh, I think I'll wear that today.
Yeah, okay.
I think Kiki might not like this.
Yeah, that's right.
I try to wear stuff Kiki don't like.
Yeah, that's right.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
But, you know, we out here doing it.
I like that shirt, though.
Oh, thank you.
Is that black or blue?
It's black.
That's what I thought. Okay.
It's black.
All right. Okay.
So what's the word? What's the science, man? What are we talking about?
Nothing, just chopping it up. You know what I'm saying? I appreciate, you know, the services you rendered as far as helping me with the design my shit, man. This is my graphic artist, for those of you who don't know. You know what I'm saying? My graphic artist who putting it down. You know what I'm saying?
I do graphics, graphic design media. Y'all can hit me up.
Yeah.
Nowhere. You know what I mean? On my Gmail, kjmiurrelle@gmail.com. Right now, I'm doing graphics for Kiki for the 29th coming up, the 25 years later after the riots. I'm also working with a few things. I'm doing, I'm head of the art department for DJ Quick Blue Company, Mad Science. I'm doing stuff. Oh, but a friend with weed is a friend indeed. Give it up for the dreadlocks.
One time.
Yeah, one time.
Give it up for the dreadlocks.
Give it up for the dreadlocks. Hold on now.
Pimp down.
Hey, pimps down, hoes up.
Yeah.
Nah, so we out here doing it. I want everybody to tune in.
Yes.
And everything. We just out here trying to uplift people. And
as
everything.
We do. As we do.
You know? So what's
appreciate
the word,
it. Appreciate it. Appreciate the designs. You know what I'm saying? And
How long you been doing graphic design, my brother?
You know what? That's a funny story. I started doing graphics in the 2004. Alright, I was working on an album. I had a graphic designer come over. We spoke for like 2-3 hours. And so we spoke for 2-3 hours about...
We don't have long.
Okay, comic book mythology, Greek mythology. We talked about a whole bunch of stuff where we can get in hip-hop history. And so he's like, oh yeah, you know what, man? You know, we could do this. And I said, hey, dude, I'm not rich, I'm not poor, but I'm going to pay you. So whatever you do, you know, bring it through. He said, well, give me 2 weeks. I said, you sure you don't need 3 weeks? A couple of days? Say it was Wednesday. It was 2 Wednesdays from that point. Called him Wednesday morning, 2 weeks later. He told me, hey, I didn't start on it, but I'll have it done by tonight. And so I was like, you mean to tell me something that we negotiated 2 weeks for, you could do it in less than 24 hours? He said, yeah, I got you. I said, dude, you're fired. So I fired him. My boy came over with a Photoshop 4. I don't play video games. So I went in. I went into the program like having a video game with no instructions. And then you had to figure it out. You know, I used to paint when I was younger and draw when I was younger. But that's basically what got me started. I did my first CD cover myself. And then I started perfecting like marketing strategies as logos and presentations. A lot of people and neighborhoods think, oh, you just make anything. You got to make it look presentable to the people, because if it look good, they'll trust it. It's a lot of great product out there that's not packaged correct. And being that it's not packaged correctly, people would turn away from it. It might be good for your teeth or your eyes or make your clothes cleaner. It could be a black-owned product that black people will pass up on and go to another supplier because maybe the packaging wasn't attractive to them as when we was growing up. You know, we are the Brady Bunch generation. The Tide, the Clorox, Procter & Gamble. We've been pretty much...
Are those products still around?
Oh, they sure are.
They're still available. That's the old shit.
That old shit's still around.
Okay, yeah. Tide?
This nigga right here, he go to the 99 right. cent store and get that.
I'm saying the youngsters these days don't know about those items.
Shit, the hell they don't. You know what's been around for a long time?
What?
$100 bill. That shit played out yet? Is them hunters played out yet?
No, never.
What happened to my $100, Joe? Nigga, did you take my money?
That's right, little bitch.
Okay. Now, man, Florence Norby, Flaw TV. Been a long time. This is my niece. My one and only. I mean, well, it's my first one. My, you know what I'm saying? JB. Jay. She doesn't live here. She's
in New York.
Okay, so talk to him.
Hi, I'm Jade. I'm his niece, as he said. I am from Cali, but I've been living in New York. I lived in Brooklyn for a while, and I live out in East Hampton. I'm doing my thing. I actually have a company called Heart of a King. It is faith-based. And when I say Heart of a King, I mean Heart of Jesus. You know, I feel like I'm a really dope Christian, you know, but I'm still regular, normal, living in an everyday world, you know, but I just know who covers me every single day, and that's how I walk through this life. So like I said, I have a company called Heart of a King. I have shirts coming out soon, different products, bags. It's going to be really beautiful. And then also got these pins. You probably can't see it from there. But it's a statement to rep your strength, rep what you do, rep how you stand, how you view yourself in the world. And that's just through Christ. You know, we live in a really, really crazy world. But that doesn't mean we have to fall to what happens in the world. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I just want to have something really positive, especially for the youth, for people of my age bracket, you know, in my 30s. But, you know, just to show love for yourself and for Christ. And I want to thank my uncle.
Okay, so see, that's the whole, that's what this is all about. This is a platform. That's what I did. That's what I put forth. Was a platform for anybody to step forward that has something to say to come up with it. You know what I'm saying? And that's what it is. I mean,
where can we get your stuff at? You have a website?
So I do have a website. It's coming soon, but you can still log on heartofaking.nyc, not .com, but heartofaking.nyc. Definitely hit me up, check me out there. I'm also on social media. My name is Jade Ford. You can find me there. Or on Instagram at Heart of a King. You can find me there as well. So.
Quick cut. Let me see the pendant.
Right here. So it's been a time. I'm here with my uncle. I haven't seen him in a while. I've seen him last year, but we don't get to see each other very, very, very often.
It's always been that kind of way.
Yeah, it's always been like that, but I know he got love for me. I always have love. This is my uncle. He's not Henry Keith. You know, this is family. This is blood. You know, like, I ran it on an interview, like, not even caring what was happening. Like, this is my uncle, happy to see him, and he's come a very, very long way, you know. Really, really rough around the edges. Very, very rough. He won't even cut that out. But it's the heart, you know. And he definitely has the heart of a king, you know. He definitely has a heart full of love, you know. So definitely, I want y'all to definitely support my uncle and everything that he does. You know, he's
turning around. We turn this around.
Yeah, turning a lot of things.
You know,
around.
We made a negative into a
positive.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
And he's very much positive. Yeah. Everyone doesn't get that part, and I understand that. But, you know, he is a positive entity and force in the family. And, you know, his ways are in all of us. You know, we just present them differently.
It's my family.
But
it is what it is. You know what I'm saying? We come from good stock.
Yeah, definitely.
You know what I'm saying? It's not like, you know, it was a broken household.
Never.
You know, it was family, so it's always been like that.
So, yeah, and so now that he's
had... This is real good because, I mean, for you to walk in, you know, spontaneous, that's why.
Yeah, it was spontaneous, not planned, nothing.
See, that's what makes it...
He's like,
better.
Sit down, I'm like,
yeah,
what?
Exactly.
Like, right now, I got love for you, you know, so I definitely appreciate y'all showing love for him, but... Definitely keep checking.
How much time
do
you think you're
going to
get, man?
I don't know, but I don't want to see you when I come home. Lawrence and Normandy, Vlog TV. Fee, Duck, with us.
It's a domino effect. That domino tip, it's going to make the rest of them fall.
The Los Angeles police officially reprimanded Police Chief Darryl Gates.
We were having deaths from the chokehold.
He didn't get along with the community.
In the early 80s, the street gangs started to connect with the drug dealers.
It just got out of control.
Karen Tsushima was killed in gang crossfire.
This is something that you always see on the news, and this time it happened to us.
We are determined to take back the streets of Los Angeles.
Operation Hammer was a free ticket to go out there and do overly aggressive police work.
That was the New Lakers and all my men.
어떻게 사람이 사람을 저럴 수가 있나?
What I witnessed at the scene was 100% LAPD policy.
Soon Ja Du, found guilty of killing a 16-year-old girl, received no jail time.
She got away with murder.
Black and brown people are being beat up, shot, choked to death by police forces all over this country.
We, the jury, find the defendant not guilty.
You just disrespect us like this? Like our lives don't matter?
Not guilty, the verdict for all of them.
We were sort of stunned.
We need to back out of here before we have to use deadly force.
It's like pouring gasoline and striking a match. It's not protest anymore. Now it's a full-blown riot.
I was a part of a movement, a black movement. It's a Florence and Normandy in every city and every state.
It was just one of those days compassion wasn't handed out to other races.
God told me to go save them, save that man's life.
You talked about guerrilla warfare, and it's right here.
18-year-old Edward Song Lee was shot to death.
That doesn't seem real. I felt like it couldn't be happening to us.
I know the anger, and I know exactly what my people are feeling.
We've lost the city. It's gone.
I want to know why God let this happen.
Unity, empowerment, they're not just cliches. We have to get ourselves together.
That's Florence and Normandy. You can find it on YouTube. He has his own channel. And as I said, he literally brags about it. Brags. He's made a whole life off of assisting in the beating of somebody else. And as stated in all the ones you're going to see, there's numerous, but the History Channel one's the first one I saw. He's proudly wearing a LA4 where, you know, he basically got off with attempted murder and that was okay. And written books and made a bunch of money off beating the fuck out of a white person. And once again, hey, that's our society right now. That's just the way we are. We've gotten no better 25 years later. There are people that are allowed to look at Ferguson. All the shit that happened. There are so many cases. If you really want to learn, go research Ferguson. And white people were pulled out of the car and beat the fuck all the time. Shit was burned down. Nobody went to jail for it. Nothing happened. But if the inverse happened, oh, fuck no. You're going to jail. Long time. They're slapping hate crime on top of it. You rarely find anything that says hate crime when it's attached to beating a white person. They just don't do it. The rest of them are Miller, Williams, we talked about, and, of course, football jackass who's dead. But going back to what I saw and what I remember, and I remember this clear as day. Once again, I was on CQ and, you know, read the blog. I don't want to wait. This is a very long podcast, so I don't want to get into everything. But I watched it all live, and I remember a face-to-face with John Singleton. He is an African-American filmmaker. And when he said this, I remember all of us. There was a couple black guys, white guy, Latino guy. We were all watching it. And I remember saying, it's going to blow the fuck up.
Los Angeles, do you think the jury would have had the demographics that it had? The jury would have reflected. You're supposed to be. Law says I'm not a lawyer, but it says you're supposed to go before a jury are your peers. Those people are not his peers. The people that indicted Mike Tyson were not his peers. Listen, all this stuff, the whole, it's just like a bomb. It's a bomb. We're sitting on a bomb. You know? I mean, this happens. They put a black man in jail for kicking a dog, but they let a Korean woman off for shooting a young black woman. What are they telling our kids? You know?
We'll talk to you, man, but one at a time, please. You want to talk to
you?
One at a time, please.
Attorney is talking about justice. Where's my justice? Letting a person drive down in my street with a belly full of beer. You know, it's a good thing I drive to work around there, and it's a good thing that I wasn't there that night. He could have killed me. And you know what?
But it was not
justice. Where's justice?
Ain't no justification on that one.
Why is the videotape was shown? Everything was on there. And one woman had to figure out. They already knew.
No, nobody knew. That was no. Nothing.
Different perspectives. People speaking different languages.
Yeah. I remember watching it, and I remember that was going to blow up. There's two movies. I cut down the 25 days and played the full 23 days from Kiki. Big Kiki making money off beating a white guy. Let It Fall and Burn, Motherfucker, Burn. I'm not going to play it because the podcast is pretty long. But I would ask you to look them up. Let It Fall and Burn, Motherfucker, Burn. see the portrayal of it, see how it's being presented 25 years later as the greatest thing that ever happened, and that they believe culturally that was great for America. That was great. Those people are heroes for almost killing so many people at that intersection. And 50 people dying. They think it's the best thing ever, that they're just proud of it. And being that, you know, once again, I'm not some anti, you know, white Klan motherfucker. I just live this. And I remember the anger when I departed LA and what I saw, and that was America and all the racial epitaphs tossed my way. Building after building, black owned, Korean owned, white owned, burned down to the ground. And all the racial shit. It changed me. My blog points it out. It altered who I was as a person. It made me look at people totally different. I lived a Pollyanna life, integrated. Never looked at people by their color. But I realized there's a whole sect of our country that are still here. And now they're part of the black, instead of Black Panthers, they're part of BLM. And they look at the whole world as race. They look at everybody as the color of their skin. That's how they look at it. They just believe that, that's the way it should be. So I was going to go into a cultural soundbite. I'm going to push it to the next podcast because we're really long right now. And it is an interview, with, Singleton, Charles Burnett, Gary Phillips, Anna Deavere, and that piece of shit race baiter, Dr. Frickin', what the hell's his name again? Dr. Race Baiter is what I call him. He's just a race. You see him in these interviews, it's like, oh my God, you're a racist. I mean, if you were saying other, Todd Boyd, super racist. Dude is out of control, and he's been in all these huge things, lately. You see him on TV all the time, you just don't know his name. And he's at the center of all this. They brought him out for all these ode to Reginald Denny beatings. You know, I think it's just great. But so that completes our segment. We'll bring that into the next podcast so we can shorten this up. I thought it was interesting to cover it. And once again, to some people, you might have not wanted to listen to this. But I still look at this event as a seminal moment in my life as a young American in America, which is a double America, which is kind of weird. And it, if you lived it, it is as shocking to the rest of America. And I don't mean that white America. I mean the rest of America, where we don't spend our every living days thinking that there's somebody keeping us back, holding us down, treating us like shit. No, that's not how we look at it. White, black, Spanish didn't fucking matter. In my infantry platoon in Watts at 103rd and Grandy in May 1992, we all changed. I guess it could be the equivalency of Ferguson for some people. Because we saw human nature for what it was. And it shocked us. Because I cannot articulate. I tried in a blog and I wrote it 5 times and I stopped. I can't explain to you what I saw in those 2 weeks in LA. I can't. It was the ugliest shit I had ever seen. And just like a day in combat where we got mortared, which gives me nightmares to this day, that is something that I just boxed up because it made me hate people. And I'm not saying race, I'm saying people. That human beings could do that to other human beings that had nothing to do with Rodney King, had nothing to do with the court case, had nothing to do with the system. They were just people trying to live their lives. Yet every day in our country, that's happening right now. It's not getting reported. I report it. If you support Trump, got too many stickers on your car, you're getting your ass beaten. If you drive up on the wrong road during a BLM protest, you're getting your ass beaten. The Antifa is doing it all over Berkeley. And it's okay. Because Trump's president. We have got a sect in our country, the progressive sect, which the media is part of, that believe we can excuse heinous actions by people because of the situation they're in. And I say to you, my friends, that is wrong. Nothing that has ever happened post-slavery and Jim Crow could equate what people are doing in our country. I could understand those periods because if you were an African American, you were getting beaten, water hosed, couldn't eat in a fucking restaurant. It was crazy. Then I could excuse away beating the fuck out of somebody that has nothing to do with it. But when this guy, Kiki, has a fucking YouTube channel with hundreds of thousands of people watching it, celebrating the beating of a person 25 years ago, and African American leaders, scientists, professors think that's okay and excuse it away. And in every fucking article I read you, and that spans 25 years, excuses their actions. And because they were black and Reginald Denny was white, they got off, which is the equivalency of four white officers getting off for beating a black man. So we could have status quo, I guess. It still is incredible to wrap your mind around. What does that say about us? I mean, what does it say? I said it for the last 8 years to my friends, black, white, doesn't matter. Barack Obama did more to put back racial relations than he ever fixed it. Our media does more to ruin race relations every day with their lack of consistency on reporting what is happening in this country and the fervor in which, you know, a white kid naked on PCP gets killed by a black cop. That's not a problem. A black person on PCP getting killed by a white cop becomes a national incident that they incite riots over. Yet it's the same thing. Where are we at? And as you notice, I don't have a segment to cover that because I don't have words to describe that I just covered for an hour plus. An event that happened 25 years ago and you could transplant it to today and it'd be the same goddamn thing. Same reactions. The system made them do it. No personal accountability. Because America's bad, I guess. I don't know. To a music break and news and social media nuggets.
Yet our best trained, best educated, best equipped, best prepared troops refuse to fight. Matter of fact, it's safe to say that they would rather switch than fight.
Hey, chains up and strange. People, people, we all the same. No, we're not the same, cause we don't know the game. What we need is awareness. We can't get careless. You say, what is this? Oh, beloved, let's get down to business. Mental self-defense or fitness. No rest to show.
You got to talk about what you know.
To make everybody see. In order to fight the powers that be. Fight the power.
Now it's time for news and social media nuggets, the crazy stuff that makes your host lose his mind.
Military Corner. Marine shot to death in McDonald's drive-thru after honked horn leads to fist fight. This is one of the most senseless acts I've ever seen, an Indiana assistant police chief said. Basically, he pulled up to his order and the traffic was moving and this car didn't, so he honked. The guy came back, shot him through the window. As his friend said, it's hard to believe he fought in wars and he came back and got killed at a McDonald's. I don't understand people. Iran's new stealth fighter looks like a flying garbage pail. Last week, the Iranian military showcased the newest version of the Kohar F-313 stealth fighter jet for government officials and defense contractors at a Meherabad air base just weeks after the Iranian defense ministry announced that the fifth-generation fighter has passed operational testing. It was nearly serial production, but there's a problem. The new aircraft looks like a complete pile of garbage. This should surprise no one. When Kahar, or Conqueror, in Farsi was initially unveiled in 2013, Western observers quickly dismissed the sleek aircraft as a hoax, a mock-up constructed purely for domestic propaganda. Many cited several aesthetic irregularities in the aircraft's design, and it basically, not going to fly. You can go to Task and Purpose and see the article, but there's no way that thing flies. It looks like I made it. Out of cardboard. Wild pigs kill three ISIS fighters, restore some karmic balance to the universe. Karma is a MF-er, the article says. So are wild boars. On April 23rd, a menacing squad of ISIS fanboys got acquainted with both. A herd of wild boars has mauled three Islamic State militants to death, injured five in Iraq, while the extremists were setting up an ambush. The militants had taken cover in a bed of reeds near fields in Hamarin Mountains, about 55 miles southwest of Kirkuk, when they were attacked by the animals on Sunday, a local sheikh told the Times. The group were planning a surprise attack on local tribesmen who formed an anti-ISIS brigade. It's likely their movement disturbed a herd of wild pigs which inhabit the area, as well as the nearby cornfields. The area is dense with reeds, which are good for hiding. The pork tenderized militants had recently committed 25 execution-style killings in Hawija, nearby a village known as an ISIS stronghold. So that, to me, my friends, is such good news. Something about a pig killing them. And they hate pig. It's just perfect. It beats the pig-coated bullets. Because now the teeth went in there, and it's just awesome. 17 years ago, the U.S. Army blew up a giant swastika in Nazi Germany. This was April 22nd, 1945, and I just wanted to remark on it because that's a great accomplishment that war, how it turned out, but also a sign of what we were after September 11th, let's be honest. I don't think we could ever do that again. Not with the youth we have. Especially the ones on colleges. The snowflakes would melt and the sheer horror of having to do something for the country they hate so much. New computers could delete thoughts without your knowledge, experts warn. New human rights laws are required to protect sensitive information and person's mind from unauthorized collection, storage, use, or even deletion. This is some deep shit. I'm not going to read it because it's too freaking deep, but they're talking about the way they're trying to get in and connect the human brain to computers, and you start thought Facebooking. Remember we covered on the last podcast. And this one's saying that the computers can maliciously hack you. That's what they're concerned about. I don't know, man. I'm to the point where I want to tell some scientists, the Matrix was a movie. Okay, it was just a movie. It was pretend. Don't make that shit, because I would still look fat in a leather outfit. I wouldn't look good in it at all. Michigan State Representative introduces bill banning Sharia law. You either adjust to living by the laws the U.S. already has in the books or you can leave. Someone has finally taken a stand against the Islamic caliphate that is happening in Michigan. Republican Michigan State's Representative Michelle Hoytonga has proposed a bill to the state legislature that would essentially ban the practice of Sharia law in Michigan. I doubt it's going to pass, but good for her. Because if you really do some Googling and start looking at what's going on in Michigan, that shit's is out of hand, folks. I'm sure there's more than one female genitalia mutilation doctor operating up there by the Great Lakes. New Orleans began removing Confederate statues by cover of night. A couple more statues got moved down New Orleans, and it totally made me think about the rebel flag. You know, talked about it on the show before. I was there in the 90s. The big push was to get it off the Capitol, rightly so. And then they agreed to put it someplace. And then 2 days later, the NAACP started protesting where that was. And then fast forward to the crazy Dylann Roof, and it gets yanked off, and here we are now. You know, every Confederate flag needs to go. Every Confederate statue needs to go. Any, this wipe history out. But this one was interesting because the mayor of New Orleans decided to do it at night, not to start problems with people who wanted the statues. And all the uber libby lefties lost their goddamn mind because it wasn't under, it was under the cover of darkness. They won, but they wanted to win better, I guess. They wanted an extra touchdown on the board. Weirdos. App creator apologizes for racist filter that lightens users' skin tone. The makers of Face App are backtracking after users accuse a popular face morphing app of racism. According to the company, the app will transform your face using artificial intelligence in just one tap. Troubling, this last option, labeled as hot, appears to lighten the user's skin tones. And this article is a liberal site and it had a bunch of pictures of black people who were protesting because it made them a light-skinned black person. And since we know light-skinned black people are bad, just like white people are bad, the BLM types just frickin' lost it. Student, Notre Dame expelled me because I'm male. An undergrad claims Notre Dame kicked him out unfairly after a harassment investigation and ignored evidence that the girl wanted to ruin his reputation. Suing the University of Notre Dame in federal court, alleging the Indiana school launched a discriminatory investigation that found him guilty of stalking, dating violence, and harassment of an ex-girlfriend, then expelled him just 3 weeks before he was set to graduate. Filing a suit under the pseudonym John Doe, the former student is asking for undisclosed damages, but first his lawyer says he just wants to be let back in. John's case joins dozens of other pending lawsuits nationwide, alleging colleges and universities have overcorrected in the recent years when it comes to investigation of sexual assault and harassment on campus. Wow. That's pretty tough. But it's not surprising. After that fake Virginia Tech stuff, I mean, every college is going crazy trying to protect themselves. What snowflakes get right about free speech. Interesting article. I'm just going to cover a little bit. As one of the premieres of his landmark Holocaust documentary, Shoah, the filmmaker Claude Lanzmann was challenged by a member of the audience, a woman who identified herself as a Holocaust survivor. Lanzmann listened politely as the woman recounted her harrowing personal account of the Holocaust to make the point that the film failed to fully represent the recollection of her survivors. When she finished, Lanzmann waited a bit and then said, "Madam, you're an experience, but not an argument." This exchange conveyed to me by Russian literature scholar Victor Erickson some time ago has stayed with me and has taken on renewed significance as the struggle on American campuses to negotiate issues of free speech have intensified, most recently in protest of Auburn University against a visit by the white nationalist Richard Spencer. The rest of this article, because it's from a liberal site, is that everything that could be considered out of the norm in regards to the agenda the left pushes is racist hate speech and should not be on campus. You know, I've researched a couple of these people that are supposed to be hate speech people, and I can't find why they're being called hate speech people. I can't find it. It's very confusing. It's just they speak about how the whole concept of racial quotas and yada yada is probably bad. Probably bad. I know for a fact I was passed over at least once for E7 in the Army because I was a white guy. I made the first cut. But then they went back and racially quoted it and I got the bump. Is that right? A lesser qualified person on the first round where race isn't even part of it? I don't think so. Yeah. Beauty brand apologizes for including white people in their ad. Right into the fire pit. This week, Shea Moisture, a family-owned by beauty business that has historically catered to the black community, published an allegedly controversial commercial centered on the message of not hating your hair. The advertisement featured women of different ethnicities talking about what they don't like about their hair before learning to love their natural hair and trying Shea Moisturizer. The standout line for the commercial is instructing people to break from hair hate with a million ways to love your hair instead. Despite of
body positive feel good message about embracing your natural self. The commercial immediately evoked outrage online for many in the black community. The topic Shea Moisture even trended on Twitter. The Root accused Shea Moisture of a whitewashing marketing ploy. Rightfully dragged on social media for what they say appearing to be catering to white women for financial gain. Yeah. Yeah. Who's the racist now, bitch? This girl freaked me out. Women who spent her teens dressing as a goth splashes out $35,000 on transforming into a real-life Barbie. You can find it on Drudge. Her name's Ophelia Vanity. Sweet God, Lord Jesus. Creepy what she's done to her body. She's even going to remove some ribs. I worked for a lady that was that conscious. Beautiful girl. Boobs were way over proportion, fake, and never moved. And she had removed her bottom ribs so she could look skinnier. The weird thing was she weighed like 10 pounds wet. So I don't understand why. In Dayton, Ohio, a deadly dog attack. Corner IDs man killed by pit bull. It was pretty scary. I had a video. I'm not going to play it. It was pretty crazy. I don't like pit bulls. We had another Facebook killing. Thai man murders a child, kills himself on Facebook. A man in Phuket filmed himself killing his child, then himself on Facebook Live, April 25th. The latest example of social media networks' live streaming function being used to broadcast grisly crimes. They gotta get that shit under control. They do. It's freaking horrible. Concerned community questions rumors of DeSoto coach firing. This is an interesting story. It was covered on ESPN and a few other places. But when you break it down, this guy was a state championship coach, but he was fired, and black parents are saying he was fired because he's white. They said it, not him. You can look up the article, North Texas. It's called DeSoto High School. Unfrickin' believable. The next one is a soundbite. I'm just going to play it, and then we'll talk about it.
In Clay County, we've now learned several people have been arrested after a fight at the Orange Park Mall. Videos of that fight yesterday have since gone viral, and many of you have called our newsroom looking for more information. We now know five people, including four teens, were arrested there. Channel 4 Scott Johnson walks us through it, speaking with stunned shoppers.
The scene is chaotic, to say the least, as the group of what appear to be mostly teenage girls brawl, and the fight continues for many minutes before it finally disperses. I showed this video to some shoppers in Orange Park, outraged that it could happen locally. What do you think of that, happening in the middle of the mall like that?
That's not right. They need more security out there. They need a lot more out there for them children. It's just, it ain't. It's the way they're growing up and what they see.
That's the way things are. People aren't comfortable anymore. You don't have any family life. So.
Would that be scary for shoppers? Knowing they're just walking through the mall and stuff like that breaks out?
Yeah, I'm sure. That's why I don't go there.
I also talked to News for Jack's crime analyst Gil Smith about this because, sadly, this type of fight is a trend that has been happening across the country, often in malls. Gil says these fights are often organized beforehand on social media. He says many times the young people involved usually wouldn't be in trouble but join fights like these. And he says if you're out shopping or a store owner, it's best to never get involved because the crowds are so big they can overwhelm anybody. Let police handle it.
It's best not to try to intervene to break it up because not only the people that you're trying to stop fighting, but the people around them may turn on you also because they don't want it to end. And you could have a large number of kids attacking just that one or two people who are trying to break it up.
Scott Johnson, Channel 4, the local station.
As we said, five people have been arrested. None of their names have been released. Their charges range from resisting arrest to battery on law enforcement and trespassing. No
details. Oh, hey, bumping out in here. Oh.
Unbelievable, folks. Once again, every girl was African American. Again, once again, I just want to bring up, because the topic of this, I'm not trying to do a white nationalist anti-black podcast. It's not my style. It's not who I am. And I think over 184 shows, I've proven that. But if a bunch of white kids do that, what would that be in our media? It would be out of control. You never not see it. CNN would do whole segments on the hate and rage of the Aryan race. Don Lemon would cry on the air and tell the stories about when he was a gay young African-American getting beat on by white boys. That probably wouldn't be true, but that's what he fucking knew. Crazy. Usually at this time, we're doing a Friday free-for-all. Didn't do one today, but we would do Big Sis, Motivational Corner. But Big Sis didn't send me anything other than this great article. So we're going to cover it, Big Sis. And I want to thank Big Sis for the new Packer t-shirt. I accidentally posted a Packer t-shirt on my wife's Facebook page, and Big Sis saw it. So Big Sis bought it for me. And Big Sis has been buying too much stuff for me. Makes me feel guilty because I don't have any money anymore to buy Big Sis anything. But I got a couple things in mind, so your mailbox might get something soon. But thank you for the shirt, sis. I really love it. For those who are going to mock me, it's like a plaid Green Bay Packer shirt. It's super preppy. Reminds me back in the 80s when I was preppy and I had hair and I had a waistline. And well, chicks didn't dig me, but I at least had some rap. Just a little bit of game, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, to our article, mom writes heart-melting note to NFL star who set a shining example. When it comes to professional athletes, we want our kids looking up to people who are role models both on and off the field. For one mom this week, Mohamed Sansu was just that. The Atlanta Falcons wide receiver and Rutgers alum was headed to New Jersey for a spring football game at his alma mater when a woman seated behind him on the flight approached him with a letter. She handed him a folded up piece of paper and told him to read it later before walking away. It turns out that while the number 12 spent his flight deep in his playbook, the family behind him spent their flight deep in admiration. The letter read, "You don't know us, but we wanted to thank you." All right, let's see if I can read it. "But we wanted to thank you. Our son sat behind you on this flight and watched you. He saw you studying your plays, watched you make healthy choices with your snacks, food, and drink. He watched how polite you were to everyone. He's only 10, but just made an elite hockey team, and we are on our way to training in Connecticut. You're an inspiration to children, and for that, you should be proud. Thank you, and best of luck, the family that sat behind you." Wow. That is so sweet. When the Falcon player later read the letter, as instructed, he tweeted a photo of it saying, "This definitely puts a smile on my face, the little things. It's not every day that you have the excitement of sharing a flight with a pro player. For one 10-year-old athlete, there's no doubt that Mohamed Sansu was a source of inspiration in his young sports journey." That's a good one, sis. Thank you. And, you know, I think it's inspirational. I think, you know, to be quite honest, if you really look at all the stuff that these pro football athletes do, there isn't, you know, there's a reason there's a Walter Payton Man of the Year. They do great things, but all we hear about is the Rices that beat the shit out of women, diluted pee samples, because tonight's the draft, which, yeah, I'm a geek. I watch it. It's the Packers, man. Mom will fall asleep and I'll watch the draft for a while. But you don't see these kind of stories. They don't get the airtime. If there's any sport I think that gets a really bum rap, it is pro football. I think that's because the liberal media types, they don't like people like that. Those guys are warriors, and it's a violent sport, and they like watching guys run around and kick a freaking soccer ball. Sorry for any soccer fans. Just don't get soccer, but it would be nice to see more of these inspirational moments. So I close this with the simple statement. During this, it seems pretty negative towards those that attack people in the riots and pointing a lot of differences in how we cover that kind of mob reaction when they're African American, like Ferguson, where they were lionized on TV every night and they were the victims. And we never cover those that get the beat down because of some social injustice that somebody perceives. I once again put out there, I am only doing it because it's not done. I'm not doing it for ulterior motive that I don't like black people or I'm a racist or any other things. I just want to make sure I make that disclaimer. I just find the riots from my personal perspective, and if you read my blog, you'd understand it was a cultural moment in my life that changed my view of human nature and also changed my view on racism, and realized for the first time in my life, it's just not white people that are racist. There's every race has something wrong with another race. Light skin, black skin, you know, amongst blacks is a racist problem that happens. And I think I wanted to accentuate on the heroes, four African-Americans who came out and saved people that day. Because as some of the articles I read stated, we did focus on the killers and the thugs and the people beating the shit out of people. We didn't cover those people. So even though I scoff at some of the journalistic background on how we've covered it since 1992 until now, I will say there was some truth in that we did focus on Florence and Normandy, and the people happened to be black. But I do not think every person in the world believes every black person is that person. I think that's where the journalists get off. I think my point and what I'd like to close on, those people take and use race relations where they live, and they use it as a crutch, and they try to use that crutch to justify terrible actions and crime and drugs and thuggery. When there are so many people that have picked up their bootstraps and got out of that, and it's just not a black thing. It's a white thing, people coming out of trailer parks. It's an Asian thing, people coming out of the filth and the abject poverty on a level that makes Watts look like it's a rich village of the Orient, because I've seen that, or the Middle East. And I think what disgusts me the most about this, and you'll hear it in the cultural segment we'll do in the next podcast, that all of a sudden, because of terrorists, now another group's under the eyes, is a statement one of these actresses said. But I've been to the Middle East, and not every Middle Eastern man takes his plight in life and how he perceives the West and goes out and fucking kills people, most of them being Muslims, which makes no goddamn sense. But we do have to focus on the people that do horrible things. And we as a society cannot condone that with, well, he had a bad life. Kiki and football fucking jackass almost killed people. They killed people because they didn't like the police. They didn't like white people. These terrorists and these ISIS fuckers, they take a religion and pervert it and take a bad situation, which their life is, and they use that to justify killing innocent people that have nothing to do with anything. And I think that's what the point is. It's not a race aspect, but it'll be perceived that way by some. If I handed this podcast to any reporter, say Chuck Todd, oh, you're a fucking alt-right white nationalist. And I'm not. I'm just saying on a given day, a bunch of African Americans chose to say that the racist society had treated them wrong, which gave them the right to go try to kill people and do a civil insurrection that destroyed a city and cost over $1 billion of those years' dollars. And I would say the same damn thing about a bunch of frickin' Muslims who decided to pervert a religion and go blow up a bunch of innocent people. See, the left and the media excuse conduct. We as a society should not excuse it. We as a society should give two shits if your daddy never loved you, if your mommy beat you. It has shit to do with it. We as a society should expect conduct, which is to treat others as you'd want to be treated. Because as I said numerous times in this podcast, and I will close with that statement, let a bunch of white people go fucking tear down their own town and blame it on a tough life and that the system's got them down. Racial quotas drove me to pull people out of a car and bust their head with concrete. I will tell you today, my friends, you know that answer. It would never be condoned. It would never be excused. It would be white nationalism. As we said in those articles, every one of them were part of a African-American gang and were raised in the Black Panther Party, which is the equivalency of today's more radical Black Lives Movement. And if that's okay to them, do we as a society accept that? Can we accept that? That you can go beat, maim, destroy property, tear shit up, and it's okay. And I tell you, that's what the liberal media thinks. That's what Democrats think. That's what Baltimore allowed. That's what Ferguson allowed. And there's no justification for it. The greatest leaders in the African American movement, including Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, at the end, after he went to Mecca, never spoke of that. That was not the way. Yet you're going to watch these shows, and if you choose to watch them over the next few days, everything you just heard me read is going to be in glowing pictures as they excuse away horrible, racist conduct. Because if you purposely pull white people out of a car and beat the fuck out of them, that would be a hate crime. But even back then, it was never coded as such, and they all got off. What does that say? So this wraps up another episode of Flyover Politics Podcast. Please feel free to share this with your family and friends and send comments about the tracks to FOPPODCAST@gmail.com. FOPPodcast@gmail.com. You get this show on SoundCloud, Podcast Addict, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, iTunes, Blueberry, and Stitcher. Remember to check out the Flyover Politics webpage at FOPPodcast.com to see links to feed for the show, links to our Facebook page, and email us. There you will also see links to every episode on the episode release page and my blogs on the blog page. Finally, at FOPPodcast.com, you can suggest segments for the show or leave comments about the show. Next podcast will be conducted Monday. Already got it put together, the media bubble, and a couple other juicy articles I pulled out. Remember, with all this PC political stuff and the endless gnashing of teeth by the resistance, we can get a little distracted and miss the most important thing standing right in front of us. That is our family and friends, the people we love. Life is pretty damn good, and it goes by way too fast. So hit pause on this crap and enjoy those special people in your life before it's too late. So until next Monday, my friends, have a fantastic weekend, and thanks for listening.